have gone insane. An upside-down civilization cannot be real. A world of madness and terror.
It's the Dana Gould Hour.
Today's show is brought to you by Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Dana and using the promo code Dana. Well, it's October, and that can mean only one thing. It's time for our September show. In addition to today's show, the Halloween show is also almost done and will be posted, so you get the horror of the election and the horror of Halloween both in the same month. For today's show, we have Greg Proops of the Smartest Man in the World podcast. Follow him on the Twitter at Greg Proops. And also the hilarious, hilarious April Richardson and Chris Fairbanks. Follow them on the Twitter at APY, APEY, and at Chris Fairbanks. What's up with me? I wasn't going to go into it, but since you asked. October 13th, 14th, and 15th, I'll be back in beautiful Minneapolis, Minnesota at Acme Comedy, one of my favorite clubs in the country. On November 10th, 11th, and 12th, it's back to good old San Francisco, California, where I'll be at the Punchline. For details on all of this malarkey, just toddle on down to danagould.com and check out my live performance schedule. As for my little show, Stand Against Evil, it premieres on IFC at 10 p.m., on Wednesday, November 2nd, with a special preview on Halloween night. If you live in the Los Angeles area, we'll be holding a special preview and premiere party on October 19th at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. We'll have a little party, and we'll show the first two episodes on the side of a mausoleum. Sure, it's tasteless, and it's open to the public. But you need to RSVP, because seating is limited. Go to Cinespia, CINESPIA.org, if and you're interested. In the meantime, we're double pumping this month, so let's do it.
Burnings?
172 falsely accused witches want us dead.
Don't crap an apple.
Let me take care of it. Life to the head never fails.
Stand Against Evil, November 2nd on IFC.
Settle back now, content, comfortable, well-fed, and ready for some fine entertainment. Is everybody happy? Then let's go. It's showtime.
I'll see you in September.
Oh, September, when temperatures in LA dip into the wee mid-90s. It is a beautiful, crisp, balmy. Can it be balmy and crisp? Probably not. Here at Falcon Lair Recording Studios, high atop Mulholland Drive in Southern California, I am joined by the stars of True TV's Almost Genius, April Richardson.
This is the sound of my voice.
And Chris Fairbanks.
This is how my voice sounds.
Damn it.
I'm supposed to. This is the sound of my voice.
It's so funny. Even at my age, September is always like that weird back to school.
For sure.
Yeah. And there's a sense memory of depression you get.
I always want to buy new notebooks and pens.
Yeah.
Even though I no longer need them.
Yeah. I just want the box. I don't think I ever put pencils in it though. Just a frog to give to a girl. Did you know I went to elementary school in the 50s?
Are you one of the little rascals?
Yeah.
I do remember a frog and a pencil box, I remember from something. I remember buying pencil box and cords.
Right.
The men's shop in the small town where I grew up was called The Tiger's Den.
No!
Oh, wow.
And we go down
in my day, it was called Chess King.
Oh, I remember Chess King. Chess King was your home for more epaulets per square inch than any other store in the mall.
Was the Tiger's Den affiliated with the Bon Marché or Macy's?
I don't know. It was a very small...
Because the Tiger Shop is where I got my...
Oh, with the Slazenger Tiger instead of the Izod.
Mm. It was...
Izod. That was always low rent
Le
high
tigre?
School.
I think you're
Le tigre.
Right.
Yeah,
Le
isn't
tigre.
That what it was?
Yeah. Yeah.
The Tigre.
Yeah.
I know an umlaut when I see one.
Because I lived in Massachusetts and everybody wanted to, you know, you were either a preppy or a burnout.
Yes.
Yeah. In my high school. And I would, can I just get a nice old shirt? And I would get Le Tigre.
Say, yeah.
Oh, man,
I remember in
so
middle school
right.
begging my mom to get me a Gap sweater. Everybody Gap. And it was like expensive. My mom's like, I'm not going to buy you a $50 sweater. You're 12. I was like begging for it. Gap was the expensive cool brand when I was in middle school.
Now it's just like, it's fine if you don't wash it.
Yeah.
If you wash it, it will look like your childhood blanket towards the end.
Totally.
When you had to put it in a Ziploc bag or lose it to.
Right. To Goodwill.
When it began to aerosolize.
The cool kids would bring their things in a navy blue Gap bag to school. It was like the sign that you were cool.
Boy, I don't remember the Gap being.
It was cool in my hood.
The Gap was basically McDonald's. For clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah, in my day, it was where the popular kids shopped.
In the city of Atlanta or outside the city of Atlanta?
A little bit outside, yeah.
What city in Atlanta?
Alpharetta. Come on, Roswell. Where are we at?
You're really close. Marietta.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I know Georgia well now.
Yeah. I spent some time.
You're Lithia Springs?
Yeah. Yes.
I spent some time in Lithia Springs. I was in Douglasville.
Yes.
We shot Stand Against Evil, which premieres Halloween night on IFC.
Oh, my God. Halloween night. That's awesome.
And then it's repeated in its regular time slot Wednesday, November 2nd at 10.
Did you have that in your car? Were you like, this has a premiere on Halloween?
No, I was
very,
very happy about it.
Okay.
And on October 19th, we're having the premiere party to which you are invited at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
Okay. Is there a carpet? Cool. Can we do our signature move?
Yes.
Which is what?
Well,
I'll bring it up.
I leap in the air. It was an idea I had. I'd never executed it. And man, first try, we nailed it. I jump in the air, but I look limp, like with kind of a dumb ventriloquist dummy look on my face.
Oh, my God.
Well, so it looks like I'm about to toss him across the room.
Yeah, she puts her hands on my waist, and it looks like she's going to throw a grown man across the room. And everyone likes it so far.
Wow, that's amazing.
Doesn't it look real?
I'm liking your outfit in that. You have like a mom.
A twister dress.
Amazing.
It's you look like you're in a house coat. As John Ennis would say, you look like you're about ready to mix up a pitcher of G&Ts.
Yeah. But doesn't it look like I'm super strong and I can just pick him up and throw him across the room?
And you also look, there's not a lot of tension in your arms. It looks somewhat effortless.
Yeah, yeah. Just onto a table of delighted True TV executives.
It was entirely his idea. All credit goes to Fairbank.
Hi, every once in a while, I got a good one.
Yeah.
As long as I don't have to put pen to paper. As long as it's just a concept, you can riff it.
We shot in this town called Douglasville.
Yes.
There's a sheriff's department that features prominently in the show.
Uh-huh.
And so we needed a building, a sheriff's department. And so the location manager, I went down to Atlanta in April with our line producer, and we're looking around at little towns.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids went bananas because we were considering the town where they shoot Vampire Diaries.
Where's that? I didn't know that was shot in Atlanta.
That is, I think that's Douglasville. There's like a tour, like a Vampire Diaries tour that you go on. And when they came down, we went on it and they went bananas. So we found this building to be the sheriff's department in Douglasville. And we shot the show and it was great. Building worked perfectly.
Uh-huh.
And then I come back to LA and we're in post-production and we're starting to edit the show. And start watching Stranger Things, which I had never seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd heard so many great things about. And I'm watching. I loved the show. And I'm like, oh, that's our sheriff's department, too.
No!
Oh, wow.
When you watch Stand Against Evil, which I hope everyone does, if you also saw Stranger Things, their sheriff's department building moves from wherever Stranger Things takes place. I think it's in Iowa. And it then moves to New Hampshire. And is also our sheriff's station.
Oh, wow.
No way. That's crazy.
And then it goes back to its house in Georgia and sleeps.
Right.
That's so funny.
I was just like, you're kidding me. Well, maybe they won't go inside. Oh, they did go inside.
Oh, right, right.
Oh,
right.
There's where I used to pee.
Is it an is it an active operating sheriff station?
No, it's they have like this one block where it's an empty sheriff station, okay. and there's an empty courthouse like next to it.
That's crazy.
They have buildings there that are just four locations. But I had a great time. It was a beautiful state, beautiful
it's
people.
It's nice,
there,
right?
Great.
Yeah, I come from good stock, everybody.
Yeah, and we were shooting in this little town called Douglasville, and we were leaving. We shot a lot at night, and I remember driving back to Atlanta like literally 3:30 in the morning.
Right.
People walking around Douglasville hunting for Pokemon. Like streets full of people, like young people,
right,
with their phones just illuminated by the glow of their phones, hunting for Pokemon.
If I'm not mistaken, Douglasville isn't terribly far from Athens.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to do anything.
You didn't get to go hang out anywhere. Didn't even get to go to shop at Wux Free Records in Athens.
Nope, I didn't. I went to the Atlantic Station the 4th of July weekend. My adult female social companion said,
you're such a romantic.
We should drive to New Orleans. Well, girl is such a girlfriend.
Yeah. I know. It is.
She's
funny.
A 74-year-old woman. No, she's not a girl.
But isn't it funny, like, regardless of age, the terms are girlfriend and boyfriend? Yeah, that's right. So funny.
When I'm all like, this is my girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah. My dad, I think, married his second wife because he was tired of saying girlfriend.
Yeah,
that was the reason. He was like, it just sounds dumb. He said that. It sounds stupid to say girlfriend at my age.
Right.
So I married a woman I'm not sure that I love.
Are they still married?
No, she left him for a guy my age.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Snow on the roof, coal in the furnace.
Smoke on the water.
But she's like, let's drive to New Orleans. I was like, no, if I have 3 days off, I'm not going to spend one of them in the car.
It's only like six hours.
When you're working 20 hours a day, right, and you get 3 days off, it's like, no. You know, it's a great idea? Sitting here.
Right, for sure.
Yeah. And I ate like crap. And I'll tell you what place I liked in Atlanta, the Church Bar.
I don't know. That's probably opened after
great.
I...
Yeah, Church Bar's great.
But I will say that New Orleans, that was a great thing about growing up there, is like there were so many cities within reasonable driving distance.
See,
I went on road trips all the time as a kid.
See, when I go to Vegas, which I only do at the end of a gun, I imagine it's going to be 1966 and it's cool and swinging.
Right, right.
And then you just get there and it's boodly boop, boodly boop,
right.
Yeah.
And
right.
It's just guys in Ed Hardy shirts and flip flops drinking a beer and smoking a cigar in front of a hotel at 10 a.m.
Right.
Smeared with their dumbass tattoos. Awesome.
Why? What are, what that's is everyone else seeing that I don't see when I'm there?
Yeah.
Well,
and
I have
so
to
that's what the reality of Vegas is, and I don't like
it.
My fear with New Orleans is my image of New Orleans is the New Orleans of Scooby-Doo, where it's all old and decayed, and it is chock-a-block with mysteries that need to be solved.
It is.
It's usually a projector. Usually,
why would a ghost wear a diving suit? They are so cumbersome.
It's the only slide I could find, and then the filter in order to make it. Well, you kids,
can we please? I want a left turn because you brought up ghosts. Because the other day,
I know your major fear is Civil War
it
ghosts.
Is. And I'm sure you saw quite a few in Atlanta. We don't have time to talk about that.
And I love the specificity of it.
But listen, I was driving. I was on a show with
like,
Chip.
Would a Korean conflict ghost have the same?
No!
Would the North Korean Peninsula police action ghost have any?
Not the same as a beard and no mustache Civil War ghost. Not
I'm actually
the same.
A reenactor from the 80s.
I wonder if a lot of guys during the Civil War grew a beard with no mustache and then tried to go, hey, I'm the president. I shouldn't be here. Get me out of here. I'm the president of the United States.
Just quickly had painted a bucket black and put it on their head. Fourscore and let me go. Fourscore.
Fourscore and let me go.
Fourscore and what am I doing here? I need to get back to the White House where I'm depressed. I am joined today on a balmy, but I must say, compared to Atlanta, it's a cool, crisp delight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's refreshing compared to Atlanta.
Yeah. Which, by the way, had the greatest time, the nicest people, lot of fried chicken and biscuits at midnight in a swamp.
Yeah.
Which I'm now on a cleanse.
Deep fried pickles.
Had myself some deep fried pickles. Mm-hmm. Had myself some moonshine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You had moonshine?
I did.
What is this? Is new?
I started drinking beer about 2 years ago.
Wow. You must be drunk.
I'm drunk right now. I'm good for like two a week.
Right.
And I literally took like a NyQuil cap full of moonshine and for fear of losing my eyesight. and it is like drinking a peach scented paint thinner.
Yeah.
But one of the guys on the crew of the show we were doing down there, his father made it. So I was like,
Oh yeah,
I'll try it. Oh, yeah. But it was great. But it's the weather down there and the good people of Georgia endure it with great aplomb. It's like opening a dishwasher halfway through the cycle.
Yeah.
For 23 hours.
Oh God. Yeah. No, you sweat in bed.
It's tough. By the way, who I'm talking to, the star of the Smartest Man in the World podcast and the author of the book, The Smartest Man in the World. Please welcome Greg Proops.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Dana.
Where can the kids find you online?
GregProops.com, or you can go to Proopcast.com on Tumblr, or GregProops, @GregProops on Twitter. And it's all there.
Does anyone go to the website anymore?
I don't think so, no.
I think websites are fallen. I mean, I have one still.
Me too. We all do, yeah.
Yeah. My website also, GregProops.com.
Yes.
With three O's. But I wonder if people just do the Facebook. If people have, they pick. They go to like Facebook or they go to Instagram.
Right.
Or they have a platform of choice.
It's true. I think the kids are moving away from the Facebook is where my sisters post Maxims and Bromides.
Sure.
So I know that it's really not for the kids anymore.
Right.
Unless you're a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
I think it's the under 14s and the over 60s who's on Facebook.
That's
and all
perfect.
Of my ranting,
That's
raving
exactly
comedian
right.
friends.
Yes. Facebook is where my sister, God lover, will post some right-wing screed and attribute it to George Carlin. And I'll have to go, no, he did not say that.
Yeah.
He would have hated the politicians that
I had a relative say
that you love.
A complete right-wing screed. She shall remain titleless. And I just wrote her back and went, don't send me these.
Good for you.
Yeah, just don't. I love you. You know, we're sterile relatives. But if you carry on sending me these. And it was something about Obama. And the title up was, finally, someone gets it right. And I was like, you know, when it's that at the beginning, that there's no good to be had.
There's an amazing story.
No eloquence.
There's an amazing story about how right wing PACs, political action committees, destroyed the Tea Party.
Mm.
It just came out last night. What destroyed the Tea Party is gone.
Oh, yeah.
And what destroyed it was these right wing PACs that thought, easy marks. And they would send out, sign this petition. And then you sign the petition. They get all of your personal information. Then they start dunning you for money.
Wow.
For this, we have to kick out John Boehner, kick out Paul Ryan. And they sell your information. And they just, it was on Slate last night. The right-wing political action committees nickel and dimed the Tea Party to death. Mm-hmm. Which... And they also, 87% of all money donated to these PACs went to the overhead of the PACs.
Oh, yeah.
87%.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure. Like charity.
Yeah. And it goes to what we were talking about before in terms of, amidst the election and all of the baloney. I think it all boils down to not all of it, but the vast, an alarming percentage of everything we endure is motivated by self-interest.
Mm.
And it has nothing to do with party. It has nothing to do with ideology. It's completely driven by self-interest.
Oh, yeah. Raw, untrammeled self-interest.
Yeah. And people don't understand that. Like all of those people at those rallies, they don't really believe everything they're saying.
Mm-mm.
They have their own agenda. And some people are less cynical than others. You know, I think Bernie Sanders actually meant everything he said. I don't know if his economics, how well he would do in an economics class.
I'd give him a D-.
Yeah.
Closing the banks is not a great idea.
Yeah, I hate to tell that to my friends. It's simple. We're going to close all the banks and college is free.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and we're going back to single payer healthcare. Yeah.
You'd think if it was that easy, someone would have done it.
Yeah.
No, they, quote unquote, don't want you to do it. There's no they either.
Yeah.
Because they is also composed of a bunch of people motivated solely by self-interest. And everybody at the evil Star Chamber conference table where they decide who's going to get all the money, they all have their own self-interest. And yeah. they'll all slit each other's throat for a nickel. And it's all what team you go to. So it is, it's very easy to slip into thinking that it's our team versus their team, when in fact there is no team really. It's just kind of one people motivated. Team. Yeah.
But there is more evil than
don't
others.
Get me wrong. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. You know, since when did voting for the lesser of two evils become a bad thing?
Right. When was it different?
Yeah. Wasn't World War II the thing that we're always jizzing in our own mouths how awesome we were in World War II? Didn't we ally with Stalin in World War II to defeat Hitler?
Yeah.
And then we just sided with Germany 4 days after we defeated Germany to defeat Stalin.
Well, and how many corporations had to be told to stop dealing with the Nazis before we went to war with them?
Yeah.
The difference was they were capitalists. In the end, we knew we were going to have to fight the commies. And then everybody cast Patton as a maniac because he actually floated the idea of, well, let's just keep the German army in the field, turn them around, and we'll go back.
Yeah.
I'll get you Moscow. You know, the Germans couldn't hold it, but I can hold it.
Yeah.
And it's not winter now. It's summer.
Right.
And give me 3 months. I got 5 divisions. Boom.
And we can eat our belts.
Yeah. That's what he said. Yeah. We can eat our belts.
I wonder if that would have worked.
It's an interesting.
I don't think it would have worked.
No, but I mean, then there's the whole, what if we hadn't bombed Japan and we'd had to invade them? Would that war have lasted 2 more years?
Yes.
And how many people would have died?
Exactly.
And never mind how many Japanese civilians would have died on top of everything.
Yes.
But I always think, what if we hadn't fought the revolution? What if we'd simply gone like, we're declaring independence, but we're not going to fight you. And, or we're not going to declare independence. Would we have ended up like Canada or New Zealand or?
Yeah. I don't know.
You mean a nice part of the Commonwealth that has a nice standard of living and it's 250 years later and
they're fine.
and they didn't fight civil wars and, you know.
Well, as George Carlin said, we only know how to declare war on shit. It's the only thing we know how to do. Yeah.
Well, Noam Chomsky said what? That there's no need to fight any war, and that even our sacred wars, the Revolution and World War II, were completely, we didn't have to fight them. We could have negotiated or whatever. I'm always saying it on my podcast. War is fought for the rich. Because no one else benefits from it at all.
Yes.
I mean, look at the Gulf War and then the second Gulf War and the war we're in now for a million years. The corporations have certainly done fantastically.
Sure.
The oil companies and the banks and even the auto industry that failed had a giant ear.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Well, it's like, well, you know, you basically have to be that rich to carry on being that rich.
Well, World War II was what finally extinguished the Great Depression.
Right.
Like, hey.
Let's rearm, get some factories going, put some people to work.
No, that is true. I do wonder. I mean, there are
make the Chinese feel nervous in San Francisco for 5 years. wear signs on their necks.
Yeah. Evict a lot of people in San Gabriel Valley and Bob Hope can buy their land for on pennies on a dollar.
Absolutely.
It is funny. And the point of all this is just like, it's sad to say there's nothing new.
Oh, no.
There's nothing new. You know, drones are killing people without the American people knowing about it. Yeah. Read about the firebombing of Nagoya. There's been shit since we had an asshole.
Oh, you know? Absolutely.
So we
invaded the Philippines 116 years ago.
Yeah.
Which no one seems to want to talk about or remember at any point.
It wasn't our finest moment.
Well, maybe invading Mexico in the 1830s was our finest moment. That really, there was no reason to invade Mexico. We just wanted Mexico.
Right.
And we bought some of it, and then we went, well, fuck it. Let's just go in there and do this. And so we wiped out a zillion Mexicans, carried on killing them for years after the war. The whole thing that the Alamo was fought for freedom is so fantastic. The Texans had slaves, and the Mexico had abolished slavery. And they were like, God damn it, no. Jim Bowie was there with his slave.
Well, that's the thing that whenever people talk about, like, like every person in America that can pull their intellectual knuckles up off the pavement, I'm not a Trump supporter.
No.
And
he speaks his mind, Dana.
He's a truth teller.
I just want to talk about Ghost really quickly because I was driving to a show with Chip and he was telling me
I'm not Chip.
with I don't know why I was like, you know him because you know too. Everybody knows Chip Hope. He was talking about a friend of his who had moved into an apartment where someone had recently died in like 2006, 2007 or something. And I was like, oh my God, it's totally haunted. And he was like, well, no, they died only a few years ago. And I'm like, what is there a statute of limitations? I'll go. Like, you can die and haunt it the next day. Like, what are you talking about? And he was fully like, well, no, it's not old enough.
Well,
do you know what I mean? I'm like,
yeah. Also,
ghosts aren't just from Victorian times. Like, they can be from they died yesterday. They can haunt you today.
The idea of a haunted apartment is also like a haunted house. I can see, but a haunted apartment. I am the ghost of 4B. Keep it down up there.
Did you own the place? No, I rented like you.
Exactly.
But the thing was,
sometimes you can see me in the kitchenette.
I can't believe how much you pay now a month. When I was here, it was $300 a month.
Did they screw you on your down payment?
But
first, last, my patoot.
We just got in like a heated argument about
argument. That should be a place where you can go and fight with people.
Let's take this to the argument.
Let's put on
insert more quarters if you want to make more points.
Oh,
I'm gonna put on my Hillary Clinton shirt and go down to the argument.
Hand me the talking shell.
But we got in a heated argument about this thing that obviously most people we were going at it about ghosts because I was like, you don't know the rules, man. And he's like, we were yelling at each other because I was getting so mad at him that he wouldn't acknowledge that ghosts can be of any time. And he's like, we're talking about ghosts.
Do you know Kyle Kinane's joke about it? This is like my werewolves versus astrology argument.
It was totally like that. And I felt so strongly and I just got so mad that how do you only think that
ghosts... How does a ghost haunt an apartment? How does it know what apartment to stay in?
It looked just like mine. Sorry.
There used to be a birdcage here. Oh, the neighbors. I think they were in porn. They came home at all hours, and there was always a girl with a rollaway suitcase crying.
Of course, in my day, it was called a stag film.
They'd show them at Gentlemen Smokers. A stag film. Joan Crawford made a stag film, purportedly.
What?
Really?
Oh, yeah. Joan Crawford.
Did she get nakes?
Joan Crawford was... Joan Crawford used her feminine wiles to put herself into a position of power and authority from the get-go.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Joan Crawford.
Joan Crawford. I'm gonna steer you towards an excellent podcast.
Okay.
Called You Must Remember This.
Yes. Oh my God. Millie is obsessed with it.
They're now doing their summer series, which is 6 Degrees of Joan Crawford.
Okay.
And it just started and it's great.
Am I a terrible feminist for asking a genuine question of when was Joan Crawford hot?
Oh,
was she like a hot lady? Because I always thought she was like a stern mom lady.
No, that was at the end of her career. When the things that you know that most.
But even in the beginning, I think she looked like a hot. Yeah. That didn't look like a hot lady.
I think there was a time when she was, you know, 30s hot.
I'm thinking of Joan Collins.
Oh, you're thinking?
I'm kidding.
I'm thinking of Joan Armatrading.
So hot.
So hot. Tracy Chapman's so fucking hot. There you go. Suck on that.
Oh, I take it all back. She looks hot as shit.
Suck on that face, April. You want to.
Yeah. She can haunt my apartment anytime.
Yeah. She can rattle my birdcage that isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's beautiful. That's, like Ava Gardner had a butt chin.
That's like the Segway photo.
She has a butt chin.
What is a butt chin?
It's when you have like, that little.
Yeah, a cleft chin.
Kirk Douglas.
When women have that, I think it's the hottest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Ava Gardner had like a little total butt chin.
That's because it's a masculine thing and you're not attracted to women.
No, but I think that it can... Oh, yeah. That's awesome. I take it all back. Super hot. I'd hit it.
I have the jawline of a windsock filled with pudding.
You totally have a cleft in your chin. You totally have a butt chin.
But then I go sideways, and it's like,
no, you have
good evening, everybody.
Yeah.
In today's, that's my
I won't have it. You're very handsome.
Alfred Hitchcock impression.
I won't have it.
I have the jawline of a courthouse sketch of Humpty Dumpty.
I think I have a manly jaw, too.
You have a much more manly jaw than I do.
I have a super. I can crack walnuts with this
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, you've got a great jawline. Yeah.
Not women.
There's no one that doesn't want a jawline.
Yeah.
It's like, can mine be more of a cylinder into my shoulders?
Yeah.
That's what I want.
All chicks want to look like Jay Leno.
Yeah, yeah.
Arden Marine, who's been on this show, when they moved into their home, thought it was haunted and they had it exercised.
Right.
Really?
Did it work?
Apparently.
Well, what did they thought it was haunted because like stuff moved, like it was classic.
So, yeah, you know,
doors closed and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's rarely a dude in a sheet going boo.
I used to put my keys here.
Oh my gosh! Last night,
I'd be more scared of a man in a sheet.
I think I'm
especially
if you're African.
He exists.
Especially if you're African American. Yeah,
We've already been over this because you say that and then you tell that story about that place in Austin.
I've got one scary, scary ghost story. Where I was denying it the whole time. I'm like, what keeps blowing on my neck? I'm trying to work here. Just, oh, there's people here. And no one was in the building. I found out later.
Yes.
Oh,
I had a weird, was walking through the kitchen of the Ambassador Hotel.
Oh my
where
gosh.
Where Robert Kennedy was assassinated.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Just before they raised it and turned it into a new school for LA Unified.
Right.
And I just went through a, when you walk by like an air conditioning vent.
Yeah.
I went, oh, that's, and I just walked past it. I was like, oh, that's weird. Why do they still have the AC going down here? And the guy just said, yeah, it's weird. Sometimes you just walk into these blasts of cold air.
Yes, you guys.
But that's all it was. And I'm not saying it was Robert Kennedy.
I'm saying it was.
It would have been weird if it was a blast of cold air and
it
went, how
it was
you?
The same thing.
How are you? Remember the Jack was killed?
I think it was him.
I'm a ghost, boo. Boo, I'm a ghost.
Show is going to be a hot summer.
Did you have lunch? Did your children have lunch?
Crust?
I think
no
it
crust.
Was him.
There's a really funny, well, it's not funny. There's a video of Robert Kennedy touring Appalachia and just aghast at the poverty of this. This was when he was a senator from New York and after his brother had been assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just going up to these children, literally starving children, going, did you have lunch?
No.
Have you had lunch? And then it shows him back in his home in Virginia talking to his children, going, yeah, you children have it very well. Look at you for lunch. You have big plates of fried chicken, pitchers of chocolate milk. And we just thought the whole thing, I was untouched by the poverty or the starvation of the kid, but just the idea of chocolate milk in a pitcher. Wow, they're rich. Yeah. They have pitchers of chocolate milk.
So
and then the way my brothers and I would do it, eventually the words lost meaning. It would be
right.
Plates of fried chicken, pitchers of chocolate milk. And then pitchers of chocolate milk became pitchers of chocolate milk.
It just got so heavily exaggerated.
Big plates of chicken, pitchers of chocolate milk. It's like the impression of John F. Kennedy. Eventually, he becomes an eagle. I ask you.
Old-timey rich kid. Picture of chocolate
picture
milk.
That, or that. We used to talk about this.
Fried chicken and chocolate milk for lunch.
I mean, right. This came up at Chelsea lately one day. Me and Christopher and Jola were bonding over the fact that we had friends. Our level of rich is a person that had a separate fridge in the garage for soda.
Oh,
those were what the rich kids had.
Yeah.
Are you a millionaire? How do you have an extra refrigerator?
I had a fridge in my garage.
That's
here.
Rich.
No, here.
Oh, you're
this
rich.
This house.
Yeah.
And it got ruined because it somehow got unplugged and I had some ground turkey burger in the freezer.
Oh, gnarly.
And it was so funky that when I opened, I was like, what died in here? Literally
right.
Something died in here. And I realized I was walking by the fridge and then I looked and I saw that it was unplugged and I was like, ew.
So you just had to toss it because it was so contaminated?
You can't get the smell out.
Right,
no,
right.
Can't get the smell out. My refrigerator, my whole life, something had died in it or in that way. Because in a roundabout way, a turkey did die.
Yeah.
And my whole life, everything, the ice cubes.
Your whole life?
Yeah, the whole time.
Your parents made you take it with you to college.
You can never change this refrigerator. You will carry this refrigerator with you like an albatross.
Until I was 18 and went to live in a dorm room.
Right.
I had the funkiest.
Oh my God. This non-corpsey ice is fantastic.
Yeah, this is so
fresh. This is going to sound awful, but added to it, I had this pet frog, not the one I kept in a pencil box. He was amphibious and I knew to keep him underwater until my mom accidentally bumped the heater and boiled him to death. But frogs don't feel that.
No.
Unless you throw them in boil. Isn't there a saying?
Yeah. Frog in a saucepan.
Apparently someone did the research.
yeah. Well, that was always the thing. Has anybody ever asked the frog if they feel it?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they're paralyzed.
I'm fine. It's totally normal to have my intestines coming out of my anus. How do you tell when a frog's panicking? We fed him these worms, these tiny worms, and they smelled, and then food smelled like these worms, too. The refrigerator was just something about...
But why didn't your parents go... Yeah, our fridge is gross. We should get a new one or clean it.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a big thing. The you know how they wrap hamburger and turkey burger in shrink wrap?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this thing had gone funky and began what they call off-gassing, which is interesting. And it was literally a ball because the shrink wrap had expanded to accommodate all the fetid grossest. Gas.
Before you threw it away, did you just pop it and inhale?
Yes, totally.
I think I might have passed out if I'd done that.
Oh, yeah. It's what is the...
I would have done that out of curiosity.
There's some Swedish, hey, I dare you to eat this thing they put in a can. It's fermented fish. I will not remember what it's called, but it is rotten fish in a can, and the can is bubbling. Like when you're warned as a kid to be scared of botulism because of...
Right.
A can is bubbled on top. It can right. kill you. I always, that's one of the things I've worried about as a child, pacing back and forth.
Late at night.
I'm going to get it. I know I'm going to get it.
With a glass of corpse ice water.
Yeah, no kidding.
Just wormy water. They knew it would do that. It was for World's Dumbest, that show I did.
You ate it?
I just opened it and smelled it, and I immediately started vomiting. And I usually
really,
I was on
really?
A boat all day yesterday, and I didn't vomit. I'm good at not vomiting,
right?
When I'm, but I
it
had
made
no
you
choice.
Immediately barf.
No choice. Yeah.
What is the thing in your body that goes throw up now?
I think it was such a foreign bad smell. It was a combination of chemical and rotten and food.
Right, right.
So
right.
all those together, it's like. Toxic
yeah.
fish that's gone bad also. That's the noise.
Wow.
Yeah, it was immediate. Immediate.
Wow. Was anybody on the show able to eat it?
Brian Callen.
He actually ingested it. Oh my God.
I know. Yeah, but people eat it there. It's a not a delicacy, but it's just this dare in a can that is a
dare in a can. There's your show.
God, exactly. That is like the best phrase.
I'm not gonna get this can of whoop ass, but I will get this can if I dare you to
yes,
eat it.
Yes, yes.
Weak.
That was no, that bad. Was and the label needs to say dare in a can. Dare,
yeah, that was
amazing.
The subtitle of the second season of The Wire. Yeah. There's a pull.
That's awesome.
And now how were you on a boat all day yesterday?
Oh, my friend learned to sail. It's very rare that, but he's always been saying, do you want to go sailing? And I always just thought of the boat I sailed on last time in Cub Scouts or whatever, where you're just facing the other person and you just
yeah, kind of move. That's a canoe.
But this was a giant boat with like jibs and a couple masts and two wow. giant sails.
So your friend's very wealthy.
He rented it.
Oh, okay.
And I think he's doing okay. He owns his own business.
And where do you, where did he take it out?
We went from Marina del Rey, where I live, and always look at boats. And I'm like, I wonder if one day I'll be, I've never been on a boat like that out in the ocean.
Marina del Rey.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I go right to the Rockford Files.
Right, exactly. Yeah. We got out of my gold Camaro.
Right.
And that, but I immediately was sick, right? Once.
Where Rita Moreno is the madam of the local brothel that you're still friends with.
Now, that's a reference I don't know, but I should not announce that.
Rita Moreno was always on Rockford Files.
Oh, okay.
Rita Moreno also has Netflix. EGOT.
She has?
Yep.
What did she win an Oscar for?
West Side Story, I believe.
Oh, and then also.
Best Supporting Actress, I think.
Also the Tony for that?
Probably, yeah. I know she has it. No, I'm just
that's
gonna,
fascinating.
I'm just going to Google Rita Moreno.
I didn't know that anybody in history had actually really done that.
Yeah, I think two people have. EGOT, for those of you listening, is people who've won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony.
Oh, didn't Tracy Jordan?
Right, I thought it was a made up thing.
A medallion, yeah.
Yeah, but I thought it was entirely made up. I didn't know anyone in history had really done it.
Name, Rita Moreno. EGOT completed. 1977.
Okay.
These are people that have EGOTs. Ready?
Okay. Uh-huh.
Rita Moreno. EGOT completed. 1977. Years to complete. 16. John Gielgud.
What?
1991. Sir? Years to complete. 30.
Wow.
Audrey Hepburn. 94. Years to complete. 41. Marvin Hamlisch.
Marvelous Marvin Handlish?
Marvelous Marvin the Boxer.
Audrey Hepburn EGOTed?
Yeah, how about that?
I like how they stated it. Years to complete.
Yes.
Year completed.
It's a mission.
Destroy him.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of Mel Brooks, Mike Nichols, Whoopi Goldberg. Whoopi Goldberg.
What? Finishing so this move. Isn't that hard.
Scott Rudin, Robert Lopez.
Whoopi Goldberg is on there?
Rita Moreno won her Emmy in 77, her Grammy in 72. Her Oscar in 61, so that's West Side Story.
Right.
And her Tony in 75.
The longer you read this list, the less rare this becomes. I mean, they're handing out EGOTs to anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're handing them out like Halloween candy.
Seriously.
And I really do feel like that campaign has no historical precedence. Like, I can't point to anyone in our history that was such a blatant huckster that Mm-mm. got that far.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I keep going over it with Jennifer and saying, well, there was George Wallace in 68 ran on a race ticket. Strom Thurmond in 48 ran on the Dixiecrat ticket, which was an absolute segregation right. ticket. William Jennings Bryan, who ran three or four times at the turn of the century, right. was a complete Christian Bible-beating mountebank. Right. But the hucksterism of this,
yeah.
they had plans, and yeah, they'd been in the system.
Yeah, they were in the system. Yeah, they were in the system. He was literally 3 years ago hosting a game show.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Literally hosting a game. And it is amazing to see there is in the sense that there's nothing that he can do to alienate 30% of the population.
No, they just want him.
Yeah.
Or they want, like you say, they don't actually have to believe anything.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to believe.
Yeah, but I mean, because he has contradicted everything he has said.
Mm-hmm. And none of it's true to begin with.
None of it's true to begin with. He could literally fuck a baby.
Oh, yeah.
And people would, well, it's an anchor baby.
Yeah.
And it's just this crazy talking head circle jerk of people eating their own tails and coughing up their own assholes.
Seems like it's really accelerated since the Republican National Convention, too, that it was such a disastrous pony shit show that – and then the DNC was really well put together and – you know, basically stole the Republican agenda. There was a lot of flag waving.
Completely
and
stole the Republican.
Jets flying over and people crying, like Kathy right. Lee Gifford and whatnot. And
but also, there's let me interject right yeah. there. He says, "Look, I'm a showman.
Yeah,
we're gonna put on the best convention they've ever seen." No, he's not.
Yeah,
he's not a showman. And they put on a dog shit convention.
Yeah,
and then he just turns around and goes, "Well, I didn't produce it. I just showed up the last night."
Right.
No, you're there every night. It's on film. And it's just like, you know, it's just like, he's never done anything he says he was going to do in his campaign.
Oh,
and
no.
he just can't, people just, no, it's going to be, nope, he's great. Most of the Hillary Clinton supporters that I know are like, yeah, I'll vote for Hillary. I don't see a lot of the excitement that I saw with Obama. Like people really thought things were going to be
different.
I
really like her.
I do too. I think she's
the most brilliant person.
She's ludicrously competent and ludicrously qualified. Yeah.
Her idea of fun is to read a code book all night and memorize it or a treaty and go through it piece by piece.
I think the big, she has, but.
Like every politician.
I think, yeah, you people try to remember, like, why is she so jaded with the press? I don't know. They started calling her a murderer in 1993.
Uh-huh. A witch. She killed her best friend
in 1993. You know, she's had a sour relationship.
Oh, and what about that incredibly lucrative Whitewater deal right. that they ran?
Right. And flying drugs out of the private airport.
Sure.
So she's got a good reason to be defensive. Yeah,
I was going to say, just a little defensive.
Right.
30 years of being chased down like a dog.
But I think that her presidency may be a lot like her time as a senator and her time as the Secretary of State, which if people stop and look back, very competent, very low key.
Yeah. That's what
remember
I'm
when
for.
The Republicans
I'm praying for Loki.
Remember when the Republicans liked her when she was the Secretary of State because they were too busy firing at Obama? Yeah. Well, if he'd listened to Clinton. Yeah. And then, you know, I think that, and
she's the one who pulled the trigger on Bin Laden, right? Oh, Biden said no in the meeting and she got her way over. Obama listened to her.
Oh, I did not know that.
When they had the big meeting and it was the five of them in the room and I'm sure it was the National Security Advisor and, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
And a couple of Joint Chiefs maybe kicking around.
Yeah.
Biden was like, I don't think this is a good idea. And she's like, I'm telling you it's a good idea. And she worked her will on, and I think Obama trusted her.
Yeah.
Pretty hard. I mean, to take your chief rival and a person that you were dismissive and abusive to for a year-long campaign and make them your conciliatory is
and get them and that is what I will say about that. To me, says an interesting thing about Hillary Clinton that you don't see with her rival. It was her turn to be president.
Oh yeah,
she was ready to be. Greg, have you ever seen King Kong versus Godzilla?
I have.
Okay. There's a scene in King Kong versus Godzilla when they first meet. And King Kong has spent his life beating up dinosaurs.
Yeah.
This is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And then he realizes that Godzilla has fire breath. And he just has this look like, what the fuck? That's what happened when Obama came up to Clinton. Obama was the fire breath to Hillary Clinton's
kind of
King
monster.
Kong. Like, what in the name of the Lord is this?
Yeah.
And she got beat, solidly beat. And then he served her a big brimming bowl of shit.
Mm.
And she said, all right, I'll eat it. You know, to go to work for the guy that beat you. And was dismissive of you, and was nowhere near as qualified as she was at the time.
No. And what, two years in the Senate?
Yeah, it was not. You know, he was
even a national figure.
No, he was. Someone said they accused him. The Trump campaign accused Obama of invading Afghanistan. When we invaded Afghanistan under George W. Bush, he was a restaurant critic.
Yeah.
He was a state.
I was going to say he's part-time critic.
He was a state senator moonlighting as a restaurant critic.
Yeah.
So
God, that shows you the kind of power he had.
But
he was able to invade Afghanistan while writing a review of a pizzeria Uno in Chicago.
Yeah.
I think the deep dish is too soggy.
But
the Taliban.
Not only will the people who he defeated not work for him.
Oh no, they were.
They don't speak to him.
They revile him.
Yeah.
Well, I said to Jennifer last night, anyone that ran against 15 people, was it 15 at one point? Would have picked 16 would have picked one of them to be his vice president, or one of them. But he's on not speaking terms with all of them.
Yeah.
Obama.
Except the one.
Right.
Who he didn't give it to.
Right.
Chris Christie.
Yeah. Right. The one who tries to kiss his ass, but he knows if he Chris Christie chased.
He wants Chris Christie wanted it, so he would never give it.
But
to him.
Chris Christie also prosecuted when he was district attorney. He prosecuted people in Trump's son-in-law's father.
Right.
Was the main target of Chris Christie, and that's a family thing. That's mafia. It's like not you because he's going to call me every 2 seconds, and I can't hear this for the rest of my life.
Right.
When Obama picked Biden. I laughed my ass off. Biden had polled at 1% and was the first Democrat to drop out in that race because he was doing so poorly in the primaries. And that's who he picked, the person who was no obvious threat, but who'd been in the Senate for 1,000 years and had tons of experience, sat on the Foreign Relations Committee of Intelligence, you know, clearly a capable guy, if a little bit of a live wire. No one would ever really want Joe Biden to be president because he's slightly frank.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
he's the Bob Uecker of politics.
Right. Well, remember when he said, you got this black guy here and he's smooth and he's intelligent. You remember during the primary?
He's
smooth and he's intelligent. I mean, what are you talking here with this guy? Like he just laid it on the line and went, America's never seen a smooth talking Harvard lawyer black guy that's calm. And what I've grown to love about Obama is,
by the way,
his sang-froid, you know.
Yes.
The first I didn't think he was, but the last term I really, really felt like the inconceivable gobs of garbage that have been thrown at him. And when the noted Slovenian philosopher and exotic dancer plagiarized his wife's speech, nothing from the White House. Nothing. Not a word.
No rebuttal. So classy.
No. Yeah. Just like, you know what? Yeah, we saw it.
Yeah.
We're not going to. Whereas Trump, of course, would have tweeted you know, 52 times. He tweets like a child tweets every 2 seconds with exclamation points.
Yeah.
And he's got shares cap lock fever.
Yeah, cap lock fever, shares. Well, by the way, my favorite ZZ Top song, shares cap lock fever. Oh, that's a Nugent song. Sorry, Nugent.
Yeah, cap lock fever.
Yeah, and it always ends with a two word exclamation.
Yeah.
Not fair.
Yeah.
And but it is
so bad.
There's nothing. Now, did you guys watch Stranger Things?
He did.
I loved it, and I
he texted
everyone,
me constantly about
I
it.
I was so into it, and but you're. I saw you do stand-up making fun of Winona Ryder's acting, because I thought she was great, but once...
I'm taking that all back.
It was, oh, really, after having... Yeah,
I just want to give her a... I'm tired of being negative.
I thought she was great, and she had a reason to be frantic the whole time, and there are people like my mom who were that way at all times.
Yeah, no, it was actually... I was going for something just for my set.
It was great.
It was hilarious.
Funny. And I talked to friends of mine that are very... close friends of mine, we have very similar tastes. Mm-hmm. And like Matt Weinhold, who's been on the show, was like, I started watching and I got bored. It's like, well, we already have E.T. Like, we'll see a new version. What's wrong with that?
Kids that are great at acting.
The cast were amazing. The story was great. It's weird to see something that is nostalgic over an era in which I was completely awake, alert, and alive.
Right,
right,
right, right. Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. I had that poster.
Right. But it was,
for me, it really reminded me of being that age and seeing those movies. Like, there's a movie, I watched it now and it does not hold up. The Travelers.
Oh, Voyagers, I think it is.
It's like a young River Phoenix.
Yeah,
like,
I think it's Voyagers.
And Ethan Hawke, and they build up. It reminded me of that. Like, it just put me in that state. And I'm a total grown up now, but the music and everything, it was great.
You think back on that era. Like when I was in high school in the early 80s, and you look back on it fondly, but at the time I was miserable. You know,
right.
I was just fraught with anxiety and insecurity and ignorance and the lunacy of youth.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, that's nice. I remember that. You didn't see it. You
haven't watched it yet.
It's basically they're haunted by a shaved bear with a vagina for a head, so it's a problem.
I honestly was, because he was telling me, like, you're going to love it, you're going to love it, but I was afraid.
She's scared of things.
Yeah, I was afraid I would be scared of it.
It's the vagina-headed hairless bear. Shaved. It, or born hairless. They don't really say. That's why scanning the credits.
I prefer to think shaved.
I think it's a pygmy hairless vagina face bear. Anyway,
and your problem with that
tomato,
is what?
Tomato.
Tomato, tomato.
Multiple just people have texted me kids. To be like, it's you're going to
love
it.
The friendship of the kids is so, that's why I liked it. They did a really good job having the most realistic friendship among kids. And something that always bothered me in movies is when the kid says something very believable and no adults ever believe them. They're
right.
Like, oh, and that's frustrating always. Like, no one will believe someone. And it's like, listen to these kids. They're onto something.
Right.
It's like, yeah, the kids are killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Sing Street, that movie you had me watch, where you're vicariously reliving your youth through these kick-ass
absolutely.
Kids, that's the best part. It's not the vagina monster bear, which is also pretty cool.
Did you see Sing Street?
No, I don't even know what it is.
Oh, it's terrific.
Sing Street?
Movie. It's a movie about these kids who start a band in Ireland in the 80s. And it's my life. It's just the greatest. It's like this kid comes.
Is it a current movie?
Yeah. It's like a Sundance. I saw it at the Sundance Theater.
You should see it. I just bought it on actual DVD. That's how much I like it.
Digital video disc?
I bought an actual physical. I own it. I'll let you borrow it.
And she
got
me a copy.
It's so great. Yeah.
I own it as well.
I just cried the entire
time. It's so funny you say you bought a DVD. I was the two guys that directed Stand Against Evil. They're a team. And I think they're 23. They're Wunderkinds. Their names are Jack Bishop and Justin Najim. And they're amazing.
Yeah, they must be. 23?
Yeah, they're like little Spielbergs. I bought the DVD of Deadpool because I just wanted to see it. I hadn't seen it yet, and it was at the Kroger. And I just said, well, I'll get that.
Right.
And they were just, at their age, like buying a DVD is...
Like, yeah, they're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, they're like,
you might as well be buying like a monocle.
Yeah, exactly. They're like buying an LP.
So
yeah.
Bizarre, especially filmmakers, you would think.
Yeah. Well, they weren't even like making fun of me. They were just staggered by it.
Sure.
What? Yeah, it was like if I bought I bought some Spats, I'll be right in.
I buy CDs regularly, but I can't remember the last time I haven't bought a DVD in a while because of Netflix and everything else. But that, I mean, I like that movie so much. I was like, I have to be able to watch it whenever I want to.
I have to be able to watch it on a piece of technology that will soon be obsolete and I won't be able to purchase.
But I don't want
to. But you can hold it up to the light.
Listen, I sold a ton of my DVDs last year. Because they were, again, I'm never going to sell CDs or records, but I was like, I don't need these movies. I've got Netflix and HBO Go and all this kind of stuff. And I sold a ton of them. But then the other day I went to go watch Catch Me If You Can, one of my favorite movies of all time.
The only movie he's good in. Continue.
Who's good in?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, that's an argument for another day because I strongly disagree.
Let's right now.
I disagree and my dad says the exact same thing.
I think he's great in everything.
So I hate that kid. He says he hates him.
I love him.
My father hates him. He wants to box him. But he agreed, Catch Me If You Can. He's like, yeah, he's okay in that.
Well, the whole point is,
I think he's a fantastic light comedian. And his attempts at heavy drama to me seem labored.
I could not disagree with you more. I think he's so good in everything.
She even brought the Greg Gatsby on VHS.
But I went to go watch Catch Me If You Can, and it wasn't on anything. It wasn't on Netflix, Amazon. It wasn't on anything. What, I got to go rebuy my DVD back from Amoeba? So now I'm sad that I sold them.
Yeah.
Because there are some things you can't just watch.
Yeah.
So suck it, 23-year-olds. We got to buy DVDs sometimes.
It all cycles back. But I also think, like, to your point about Stranger Things, I also just have my quality bar is lower. I'm a big fan of it's fine. I'm a James Bond movie freak.
Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of people didn't like Spectre, the last one.
I loved it.
I did too. I was like, what is a James Bond movie supposed to have that it didn't have? It's not as good as Skyfall. It's fine.
Yeah.
It was like the Guillermo del Toro, the Wolfman.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like people that, it's terrible. What? I draw your attention to the title of the film.
Yes.
The Wolfman.
I agree.
In the film, a man turns into not a wolf, but a wolfman.
What? It's
very interesting.
What about a version where he's a teenager? Hear me out. Teenager who surfs on bread trucks.
Teenager Wolfman.
Yes.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
What is a movie called The Wolfman supposed to have that The Wolfman didn't have?
I agree.
But it's important to know. He doesn't turn into a wolf. He turns into a wolfman. In the same way that a man does not surgically become a woman, he becomes a trans woman.
Right.
Right.
Well, I'm with you as far as cynicism. I don't care about, like, I saw the latest. I love all the Bourne movies. I love them.
You said the really funny thing the other night. You go there, you know you're going to see one thing, espionage.
I want espionage. I want dudes in suits checking their watches. I want, it's like all that kind of stuff. I want to see a scene where I'm running away from a guy and I got to jump on various forms of public transportation to try to lose him. Like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm getting. And so same thing where people are like, well, what about when I'm like, did you see Matt Damon punch that guy on the London Bridge? Yes, that was awesome. Like who cares?
Yeah. Was Jason Bourne good?
Yes. I thought it was super good. Because it's the same situation. Like, I knew what I was getting into.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, there were also times where I'm like, all right, maybe that doesn't check out plot wise, but who cares?
In the story, is Jason Bourne retired and like trying to get away from his life of being Jason Bourne?
No, he's like trying to.
by living on Mars?
Yeah. Or does he have a. Does he have a.
He moved to Mars to get away from Jason Bourne.
Did he move to Crabapple Cove, Maine and just a little bait shop? You're Jason Bourne? I used to be.
Yeah.
I used to be. I make these. And it's just a bunch of little
apple
wooden
butter,
flutes.
Fly lures.
Yeah, yeah. Lures and flutes.
How long have you been doing this? 2 days. You're bored. And how?
And how?
There's a woman in Brazil who's made of bombs. Hang on. I'm on my way.
I'm bored to tears. It's been 2 days of this. Who do I kill? Where do I take my shirt off?
Made of bombs. That reminds me. There's not a part in this movie, but I remember the last movie I saw it in.
She doesn't become a bomb. She becomes a bomb lady.
She's made of bombs. But the last movie I saw set in Brazil, of course, started off with the fucking 10-minute close-up of that Jesus statue, where I'm like, is there a rule in the filmmaking rule book that's the only way we know your movie's set in Brazil is if you show the Jesus statue?
Otherwise, you actually have to go there to shoot. Get some Corbis footage of the Jesus Rushmore.
Jesus Rushmore.
Jesus Rushmore. Why don't we put Jesus on Mount Rushmore?
That's know what? I've been saying that my whole damn life. Jesus Christ, the best president this country ever had.
I want two people on that goddamn mountain. I want Jesus Christ and Perry Mason, who never lost a case. And
who's that?
His suit looked like a car cover.
We're joking, but I honestly cannot believe there hasn't been like a petition started to get Jesus on Mount Rushmore.
There was one.
I kind of can't believe it.
There was one to get Reagan on Mount Rushmore.
Really?
Yeah.
Like to just add a fifth guy?
Yeah, just to add a fifth guy.
Close second, man. Best president we ever had. Sorry. That's just kind of fun to do that voice, but I'm no offense.
That's the voice of my parents.
It's funny is you can't really do, you can't have progressive ideology spoken in that voice. I'll tell you one thing. Colored people need to be treated equally. It just doesn't come out. You start to choke.
You can't even do it as a character. There is one guy on YouTube that has
it doesn't matter. Our Constitution doesn't discriminate against the color. You can't do it.
There needs to be reasonable. These guns aren't made for for sport.
Yeah.
Therefore, I'm sorry, I've been lying. My life's a lie. I'm from Vermont.
Listen, we need two things: gun control and cock everywhere.
Like you immediately become a giant.
I'm going to a Canadian dick club.
Screaming, become a giant screaming epitome of what every arch conservative thinks every liberal is. I wake up in the morning and I have a hot cup of tea and a big bowl of dicks.
Fanned out in front of me like a perfect peacock tail.
Yes, like a fine display of home decorating magazines.
Swatches. Like choosing what to cover my, to paint my walls with, if you know what I mean. Well, so,
I said one thing on Twitter about Trump and someone called me a cuck libtard.
Wait, I had to break that down. They called you a cock?
No, C-U-C-K.
I thought it was misspelled,
but I think it means, I think they're hearkening back to the ancient term of cuckoldry.
Yes. That's totally that.
So I'm, in the view of this man, I am a liberal person with special needs.
Yes.
Who is married to a woman that's having an affair.
Yes.
But the special needs implies that I don't properly psychologically appreciate the weight of the marriage or my political beliefs. Like, there's a mitigating factor that you have to call into question.
And what did you say about it? It was just you mentioning Trump and a guy.
I said it was back when Paul Manafort had to step down because he was a Russian influence peddler. And I was like, I hire the best people, said the guy who hired a Russian spy to run his presidential campaign.
Right.
And then he replaced him with somebody who'd never done it before. I hire the best people.
I'm sure that's one of the many.
Well, it's the reason that I never, ever, 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 ever. And if you disagree with something on, I say on Twitter and you want to fire off or oppose, just know I won't respond.
Right.
Yeah. I don't either.
It's a pointless thing.
I like
it's
to
shouting into a hole.
For that very reason, I like to mute people instead of blocking them because are shouting into, you can, because if you block somebody, they know it because they go and look and it's like you've been blocked. But if you mute them, they don't know it. And then you just don't see them. So they can just be yelling at you all day long and not knowing that you're not
seeing
it.
Yeah. It's
kind of fun.
How come I didn't realize that existed?
I don't know, but
talk
embrace
about Twitter logistics later.
Yeah.
I'm going to start muting a lot of people.
Yes.
I find myself using Instagram more than Twitter lately.
I do too. But I mean, as a lady,
same as me as well.
Either. I use Instagram as a lady and Twitter as myself.
As a lady, name a medium and I'm going to get constant gross shit said to me. I get dudes who just say the foulest stuff all day long. So I just mute them and then they just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And I like thinking that they think I can see it when I'm like, I can't even see it, bro. Have a nice life. Keep yelling gross shit at me that I'm not going to ever see.
I don't even acknowledge it. That's the interesting thing that Obama does. He's a fine spokesperson for meditation, even if he doesn't meditate. But it's just what he realizes is that the world spins whether you push it or not. And he just does not go there. And you talk about like there are voices on the left that make me roll my eyes just as badly as voices on the right.
Yeah.
As I said on the Twitter, which got me a round of hate, watching Rachel Maddow try to milk a joke out of a news story.
Yeah.
It's like watching a 12-year-old boy trying to get laid at a dance club. You don't know how to do this. Why shouldn't you be in this place?
No, Rachel Maddow.
And I remember Arianna Huffington during the campaign
with McCain going, Obama must release his righteous rage. And no, dingbat.
He doesn't have righteous rage.
No, and that's exactly what they wanted to do.
Right, then he's the angry black guy.
Right. Yeah.
Then he's the uncontrollable force because nothing's scarier than an angry black person.
Yeah, and
they're dangerous.
And this is something that you have on both the left and the right. They say, if you will only nominate a raving far left liberal, a stalwart liberal, or the right wing says like a crazy right wing hardcore conservative, then all of the liberals and conservatives that never come out to vote in the election, then will come out all and right. vote. Those people always vote.
Yeah.
That group of people that you're talking about doesn't exist.
No.
Which is why when they nominated a raving hard left liberal, they lost 49 states.
Yeah. Right. We had George McGovern.
Nine.
Who was a considered intelligent guy and a war hero.
And a war hero. War hero. Yeah. Yeah. Nixon and a really played nice card. And a very nice person. Yeah. I actually met him.
Yeah. Jennifer met him too.
Yeah. A lovely guy. Yeah. And a real
smart.
A politician.
Yeah.
You know, and a war. The American public does not want anyone too far to either side.
No, they don't.
We got tricked into George W. Bush
right.
because he was a compassionate conservative.
Right.
And he was just going to be a little bit more conservative than Al Gore, who everybody thought was condescending.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he'll be a big – I don't think he'll be a – and I want to have a beer with him, which is, you know
– with an alcoholic who doesn't drink anymore.
Right, yeah. And people always – he seems like a guy that I'd like.
Right.
Stupid.
I like him.
Do you apply that to your heart surgeon?
Uh-huh. My dentist.
Yeah, yeah. Pilot. Just give me the guy that looks like guy looks like about as smart as I am.
Don't be too accomplished.
Yeah.
Well, also those two elections, I think, were as close to banana republic elections, probably since Kennedy.
Yeah.
That were the most jiggery pokered.
Yeah.
2000 and 2004 were pretty hardcore. And then 2008 and 2012, I think, were way more legit, which is why Trump throwing in the.
Well, I think it became in 2008 specifically. It was just too much.
Oh, no, they couldn't.
They
can't now.
It was too much to rig.
Well, the demographics have shifted way too much to be able to do what they were able to do. And they won't be able to strike 25,000 black people off the voter rolls and like they did in Florida and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
What was my joke? I was surprised Haiti didn't invade us to install a democracy. No, we're turning into Italy there for a while. Who won the election? Hey, somebody wins, somebody loses.
Somebody wins, somebody loses. A lot of dead people in Chicago voted.
It's crazy. Oh, yeah, Kennedy. Yeah. Well, see, but that was – Nixon took it like a man, right? Nixon knew exactly what happened in 1960.
Sure he did.
And he lost by 500,000 popular vote,
yeah.
And that was squeaky.
Yeah.
And he just went, okay, fine, I'll go home. I'll go home. That's what soldiers did in those days.
He knew how it worked.
Also, him and JFK they knew each other, man.
Yeah, they were friends.
They knew each other.
Yeah, they were friends who grew to hate each other.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what's interesting about Trump is he's already – he will lose by a landslide and still say it was stolen.
Yes.
Because he's incapable of admitting defeat or wrong because he is a clinical, pathological narcissist. And everything he says and everything he does and every reaction he has to every input is clearly and easily predicted if you read six signs of narcissism. Yeah. They are as follows. Do you know someone like this? Clinical narcissists.
You're talking to a comedian.
I know. I was actually speaking to the great Danny Gould.
You mean thinking about myself all the time?
I think you and I
never
know,
admitting that I'm wrong.
You and I know a lot of the same ones. This is interesting. It says six signs of narcissism you may not know about, and then on the next page there's a list of nine things.
Fantastic. Oh, good. Three more about me.
Right. Does this sound
lack
like
of empathy? Right.
Does this sound like anyone you know? Has a grandiose sense of self-importance.
It's anyone you're pitching a show to?
Yeah. Oh no, here they are. I'm sorry. Yeah. Right. Is preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideals, as in love. Believes that he or she is special and unique and can only be understood by or should be associated with other special or high status people or institutions. Requires excessive.
I'm really close on this.
I know. Requires excessive admiration.
Ooh, yeah.
Has a sense of entitlement.
Mm.
Is intrapersonally exploitative.
I'm not that good at that.
No, me neither.
I would be richer.
That's the one where I go,
yeah.
Oh, thank
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Because everything up till now, I just, right. I'm wearing it like an old quilt.
Lacks empathy.
No, I'm empathetic. I'm not that mean.
No, that's your Trump. That's your,
Oh, no, he has no
empathy whatsoever.
And you're talking about Hillary and her defensiveness.
Yeah.
I get empathy from her.
Yes.
Even if it's manufactured empathy, it's empathy.
Yeah. Is often envious and shows arrogance. And the one thing that really nails Trump, highly reactive to criticism,
yeah,
or anything they assume or interpret as negatively evaluating their personality or performance. Mm. That's the one. He can't let and we know so many people like this.
Oh, yeah. The slightest
thing go unanswered in full.
Right, in
and
full.
And people say, like, he's a counterpuncher. No, he's insecure and childish. He's not a counterpuncher. He's a child.
Well, that's different than being crazy, don't you think? I've really hated the last 2 weeks. I watch MSNBC as much as you do. And they started floating this whole he's crazy thing. And it's like, that's not craziness. No. My family, I have enough crazy people. I recognize crazy when I see it. And I have enough craziziness myself to recognize it.
It is cut and
dry. He's a narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah.
Delusions of grandeur.
Textbook.
Yeah. But he's not insane.
No.
And he's not stupid. The idea that he's a crazy person who's acting out these things because he's short-circuity and all that. Like you said, it's a childlike overreactivity to almost everything thrown at him. On top of which, the last episode you and I did together, we talked about excessive cocaine use. And Jennifer floated this idea with me at the house, because, you know, we know a few people who did too much in the old days. And
no, I never encountered people in comedy who did cocaine, Greg.
They tend to have fragmented...
Especially in the 80s.
Right. They have fragmented thoughts. And Trump's glory period.
Sure.
They fragmented thoughts. It's hard. That almost ADHD kind inability to stay on one thing for more than a minute or two.
Yeah. Like when the computer runs slow and then all the windows pop up at once. And then,
No, and I get all that from Trump. If anything, I would say that it's a combo platter of that. But casting him as insane is unfair to people who legitimately have mental illness.
Yeah.
One, those people need help. He doesn't need help. He needs to be, well, obviously put down like a rabid dog, but he needs, they keep running this crappy narrative, and I even heard it again yesterday. Every Republican operative that's still on his side or that wants to keep their job at Fox News carries on saying, well, he needs to get back on message, and he needs to come back to the foundation of, and he needs to make a point. And it's like, he's not going to do any of those things.
Yeah, and there never was a message.
Well, and when he did a week ago, when he endorsed Paul Ryan with the piece of paper in his hand, and then he said, I like John McCain, and did the double thumbs up, it was so awful that I was like, I like the old Trump when he threatened to shoot people.
He came back
when he's on the top of his head and he's crazy, you know. Like, just
when there's also, and this, I think it's going to get better and better and better from a watching a freak show standpoint, because he is two things. He's sleep deprivation, exhaustion,
and he eats bad.
He looks awful,
doesn't he?
He's awful.
Looking worse than he did too.
I don't understand, literally, this is, you know, this is a surface attack.
I was going to say, let's be very shallow here.
Yeah. That's not a good haircut.
No.
Like, can no one say, just do the Biden, shave it?
Yeah.
You know.
Go short. Be a distinguished older man.
Yeah.
Let it be silver.
It really does. It is that rarity of rarities. And I say this because I suffer from it sometimes myself. It is the hair that looks like a wig.
Yes. What's this, though, too, Dana? He's orangey, and everybody calls him the Oompa Loompa and the tangerine and the saddle or whatever. The white around the eyes? That weird possum, I've just been startled from the brush.
Well, I think, I'm assuming he sleeps he goes in a tanning bed to chill out.
Right. That's what I said the other day. I said it was the goggles.
And he wears those little glasses.
Right. I said it was when you watched a James Bond movie from the 70s and the girl would get out of the thing and she'd be in the tanning bed with the little, like, Goldfinger or whatever. The little 60s goggles. That's exactly the shape of those things.
Yeah,
and I was like, is that what he's doing?
He's probably in a tanning bed, yeah.
So, cape on the shallow attack. He looks terrible. He's jowly. Surely, you know, you saw Bernie's posture. Bernie's almost like got a widow's hump, to use a terrible old expression. Yeah. Whereas Hillary.
Bernie looks a lot like the owl in the new zoo review.
Yeah.
Now, I know I'm losing some listeners. I know I'm losing some listeners on that.
I remember the owl with the glasses.
It's the news and he was like, review coming right at you.
He fucking totally does.
Welcome to Political Talk with two guys from Boston. A working man's look at the socio-political issues of our day. And now, Political Talk with two guys from Boston.
This is Political Talk with two guys from Boston. I'm Johnny Condon.
Robbie Sullivan here.
Have you gone to any concerts?
Yeah. I took my nephew to see a band. They're called, what are they called again? We the Kings.
We the Kings.
Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Well, they're unbelievable. It's like being there with like a camp counselor. And they're very nice people. They vlog and all this stuff. But the guy puts his hand up in the air and says, you know, light your phones up and sway. I'm never going down. I'm never giving up. I'm never going to leave. So put your hands up. And if you like me, say you like me. And then I swear, Johnny. Then he goes, 25 more times. Swear to God. I'm never going down. I'm never giving.
And they do it?
And the crowd goes bananas.
But isn't that... Then the crowd's really doing the show.
Yeah. A lot of it is the crowd work. The crowd is doing the work.
Shouldn't they pay them?
Well, they're like 35 tweeners, but now they're all having babies and they're singing to 12-year-olds.
They're tired.
They're tired of it, but at the same time, they realize they've created something that can't go away.
I went to see The Who.
Oh, yeah. And this is like that.
And they're so old now that Pete Townsend looks like my grandfather when he peed on a bee's nest. My grandfather one day, well, I'm out in the yard, I was a little kid, and he took a whiz, and he whizzed right into a nest of mud wasps. And suddenly there was just this cloud around my grandfather, and his dick was out, and he was just panicking, running around in the circle, jumping up and down back in the house. I haven't thought of that.
That's
true. You know, in years, I'll never forget it when it happened. My mother came and scooped me up because the back was just a swarm of bees.
Yeah.
And I hadn't thought about that in 35 years. And then I'm sitting there, and Pete Townsend comes out, and he's old, and he jumps up and down, and went, holy shit, it's my grandfather.
You better.
It's just one of those weird things that triggers your brain. You have a dream, whatever your dream is. You know, you're riding a moose through an airport, and then you wake up, and you got a whiz, and you go to the toilet, and you're not thinking about the dream at all. The minute you get horizontal again, the dream comes right
Kicks
back.
Kicks in, yeah.
Yeah, it's like your brain goes, oh, we're sideways. Go back to the dream. It's a weird, another weird thing you ever do is, you ever like dream, like you have a dream where you're being chased by a clown with a gun. And then
I will tonight.
And then during the day, you see a regular clown, but you react doubly weird.
That's institutionalized prejudice.
Like this dream residue in your mind.
That's really good.
That's true, though.
Yeah, it is true. It's scary true.
Yeah.
I never liked clowns.
Well, no one does.
No. And I once helped this guy carry a thing of like muslin or whatever you call that stuff. It's like psyllium husk.
The stuff that makes your colon blow.
Yeah. And the guy was like a chiropractor, and he's like, oh, I make everyone jazz of this personal like psyllium husk mix, and I give it to any chance you'd help me bring it to my car. And I was at a nature store. So I says to the guy, well, yeah. I was like an hour off the middle of the day. Sure, I'll give you a hand. He's a nice guy. We were in there talking with a group of people. Bring it out to his car, and he goes, geez, you know, my back's kind of bothering me. And when I get to my apartment, I'm on the third floor. I don't even know if I can get up the stairs. Is there any chance I could throw you a couple of bones to help me? Oh, no, you don't got to give me money. You're right around the corner. I'm good. So I go around the corner with this older guy. He's like 60-something years old. And he says, the door's open. Just carry it up the top.
This can't end well.
The door's open. I walk up with the psyllium husk bag of like 30 pounds of psyllium husk on my shoulder, and I walk in, and I swear to God, there's a clown sitting in a rocking chair, and it's rocking, and there's no one there, and the whole place is filled with clown art. I ran past that man,
It was a clown, like an actual
his whole apartment.
Clown?
It was a clown.
But there was a living clown?
A living clown, but like for some reason, wind, something, the rocking chair's moving,
uh-huh.
And it's not a clown that's like an empty clown or a
right.
It's a clown.
Clown figure.
I just ran.
Sure.
I'm not talking to you again. If I ever see you again, right. I think you were trying to trick and kill me.
I do too.
I'm out.
That only, if you stay, that only ends one way, and that's your skin in a jar.
But there was some weird thing about him saying, oh, just go on up, it's open, as if, like, that moment with me and myself in his apartment was what he really wanted to experience. It's like, yeah. Wait till you see this. Like,
yeah, or he's just hoping that you're the one guy that goes, my place looks just like this.
I found my clown posse partner.
And you become clown buddies.
Oh, my God. Clown now. I can't imagine why a kid would ever like it. I would never take him to a clown.
You know, they say that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction.
Who says that?
First law of nature.
No shit.
Or law of physics, I think.
I love it.
But to that end, where is the sane clown posse?
Yeah, they don't exist.
Shouldn't there just be a rational group of clown accountants to balance out the insane clown posse?
But instead of like up or down with the smile, it's just straight across.
We're fine. We're busy. We're doing stuff.
We're like weighing in the middle.
Yeah. I also like the fact that the clown posse wasn't enough. And we're crazy. You don't think people will assume that? We're rapping.
You're dressing up like this to go to rock shows?
We're rapping white trash clowns. You don't think people are going to get insane on their own?
You don't think they picked up on that part? Come on, that's pretty clear. That's weird.
No, we better be specific.
You know, we talk about concerts. What was the first show?
The passive aggressive clown posse.
But Johnny, what was the first show you ever seen in Boston? I forget what that was.
NIBQ.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, you must have been, what, 13? Bonnie Raitt.
Oh, Bonnie Raitt.
NIBQ. NIBQ, it was NIBQ opening for Bonnie Raitt on the Esplanade. I went to see NIBQ, and I only stayed for like a couple songs of Bonnie Raitt, only because Joey Stampinato played with her.
He wanted out.
I wanted out. And then I went.
What do you have against Joey?
I love Joey. And then I went to see Simon and Garfunkel at Foxborough only because girl I wanted to bone wanted to see it.
Oh, that was
and I
a
didn't
good
get
move.
Laid, and I had to watch Simon and Garfunkel. And that was a terrible.
I love
that was a terrible
Simon
day.
And Garfunkel.
Oh God, I hate him.
When my mother, I was auditioning for like a musical in like eighth grade, and I went home and said to my mother,
"Oh God, I hate
what's
him.
A song, Ma, that I could sing?" And she's like, "Bridge Over Troubled Water."
Yeah, that's an easy song.
That's what my director the next day said.
It's a 9-octave range.
He said, "Why did you pick this song? That's ridiculous. It's a harmonized song by two geniuses, and you're going to come in for a high school musical like a bridge." Oh, gee, stop.
It's written for a flamingo with its leg caught in a press.
Exactly. But my mother, you know, complexity seemed way to go.
She meant well.
Oh, she still does.
I just don't understand how two guys in the 60s that were rock stars was so sad. Were you just getting laid until you were just too tired to not be having sex?
Think about all the cafes. They sang three sad songs and they got blown. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And they're so glum.
Yeah.
Just glumly receiving a blowjob.
I can't act happier. The secret's out. Yeah.
What's wrong? Do you not like it? It's the futility of our existence, Cheryl.
I got to say, out of any rock band in history, their acting stands up as the best in the movies they're in.
What fucking movies
are they
in?
There are so many movies. What? Annie Hall, Paul Simon's in Annie Hall.
Oh, yeah.
He's in Carnal Knowledge.
Garfunkel's in
Carnal
Knowledge.
What other two musicians that were paired up have ever been in movies and been good? They're both good in them.
Yeah, I guess, but they're
come
not
on,
like a
they
team.
Are good. No, they're not like a team. Thank God, that would have been weird. Like
the Hard Day's Night, the Simon and Garfunkel take on a Hard Day's Night would have been horrific because it would have started with them getting out of the train and a bunch of girls chasing them. Then they stop and they read poems from their notebooks for the girls until they get bored and drift away.
I had a dream last night. Oh, sweetheart, wait, I'm singing, honey, wake up.
Awful, awful, awful.
I always
it's hard to watch Annie Hall. Annie Hall's not the one, but Manhattan, where he's dating a 12-year-old, that gets a little spooky.
And it's all justified.
That
now
gets a little
weird.
Spooky.
And she's so amazing, like as a smart young woman, that it kind of works when you first saw it. But now that all this other information's out, it's kind of like, maybe
now that you know that he does fuck kids, it's hard to watch him in a movie where he fucks kids.
That's not the way I was going to put it. But yeah, I guess that's got a point to its own.
Well, at a certain point.
At some point you go, well,
you just
got to
call a spade a spade.
I don't care. I'm still going to watch Sleeper. I'm still going to watch Bananas.
Yeah,
I
Sleeper's gone back to its original title, A Roofie.
I have not heard that.
Oh yeah, it's like that. Well, it's like that episode of the Cosby Kids where he drugs and we learn the origin of the name Mushmouth.
Have you ever seen the early?
Do they still show those at all? Is the Cosby Show or the Bill Cosby and the Cosby Kids on TV anymore?
I never watched.
Has it all been pulled?
I never watched to begin with.
I wonder if it's all been pulled.
Yeah, I never watched.
Dr. Fuxtable won't like it.
Did you ever see that Alan Funt show? What was that called again? Candy Camera.
Candy Camera
with Woody Allen.
Yes.
Oh, you got to YouTube that if you haven't seen it. It's unreal. He's so funny, and it's like he's dictating a letter to this woman about his girl, and the woman keeps telling him, you shouldn't say that. And it gets really, really strong. And
oh, really?
Yeah, it's really
funny.
Oh,
I'll watch that.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you have to separate the artist from the work, or you can't enjoy anybody.
Yeah.
Like Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
Used to whiz on chicks.
Yeah.
And there's before videos.
That, every time I went into a pizza place on Cape Cod, George's Pizza, Route 28, Howard Port, fantastic pizza place. Love the family. Every time I went in there, I would put in My Ding-a-Ling. You know the song I'm talking about?
Of course I do.
So every time, like, oh, John's going to put in My Ding-a-Ling. Right. I put it in every time. I love that song. I heard that at like 30 or whatever it was. And then I'm like, oh, I am never putting in
never
my
again.
Ding-a-ling again.
It's like when we used to go into that pizza place on Calm Ave and put $70 worth of Lebanon by Night on the jukebox. The jukebox was just normal songs. This was like the 80s. And it was like, I remember the jukebox, it was like 85. And like all the songs were like 99 Luft Ballons.
Totally.
You know, everything you need.
Yeah.
And then the last one, and it was the only one. All the other songs on the jukebox were pre-printed on those little slips of paper.
Oh, yeah.
And then handwritten.
Written out.
Stuffed in Lebanon by Night.
It's and really for when they're cleaning up at the end of the day.
I used to go with Eddie Driscoll and Stevie Bean.
Eddie Driscoll?
And Stevie Bean, and we put in $40 worth of Lebanon by Night.
Oh, that is awesome.
And then we'd take off running. But we take off running like, oh, no, now we have to hear that song. Eddie clearly loves.
Right,
he put
it
in there himself.
Right, you're tricking him into loving it. More? Not really.
Lebanon by Night.
My ding-a-ling. Your ding-a-ling.
Like that he was a grown man and he sat down with a cup of coffee and a notebook. Maybe it's time to write a song called My Ding-a-ling.
Are you sure it's not a cover? It seems like maybe he covered it.
There's been something on my chest about my ding-a-ling that I've really wanted to get out, and I've decided to put it in the form of song.
What was the most recent concert you've seen, Johnny?
That's a great question because I get tired now.
No, I know.
I get tired.
I see it right around 4 p.m.
Oh, I fade.
Yeah. But you go. You like to reach for that decaf.
Yeah. Because if I have a calf after 3, I'm up all night.
I know.
And the whole
me too.
Day, it's just a self-defeating syndrome.
But it seems like you're tricking yourself with the decaf.
I think the last show I saw, believe it or not, was I took my mother to see Tom Jones at Tanglewood.
Oh, what a fun show.
He is the William Shatner of pop.
But he collects underwear, I heard.
He comes out. There were women throwing their bras on stage.
That's
but these
fun.
Women in their 80s and their bras now look like unopened parachutes.
Something you use to catch guppies.
Yeah, a lot of hard underwiring. And, you know, it was. I felt he should have got hazard pay.
Sure.
But it's like all the moves that he used to make, but only the beginning of it. Like,
yeah.
He never really takes a full step, but he does look like he's going to take a step.
His hip won't go along
his
with the plan.
His hip will not move.
It doesn't. It's all tied in and wide up. But he's still got a good voice.
He's still always out there.
They love him.
He does. He does his job.
Yeah. Is there any looping in that show? Does he come out and start?
A lot
like,
of looping,
listen
lot
to this,
of
everybody. First, I'm going to go ba-dip-a-doom, ba-dip-a-doom, and then it comes back around with Tom Jones going at it. That way, he can stay a single guy doing an act without a band.
And that's you could put that on and then go in the back, have a butt,
exactly.
Have a donut, come back out.
That's exactly what people do now. The people opening for acts do a lot of looping, so they don't have to pay a band.
I wonder who's at the Melody Tent. We should drive down.
Yeah. You want to go over?
It depends on who it is.
I'd love to catch a little snack at the cream and cone on the
way. It's so weird. We'll go to the Egg and I. We'll go to the cream and cone.
Cream and cone. Then we'll go down to Sunday school and get a little
go to Baxter's Wharf.
Oh, my God. My mouth's watering. But how do you think the bridge traffic will be?
It'll suck.
Oh, for God's sakes. Forget it. I'm not going.
And then, it's such a great idea. And then you're stuck on the bridge. And like, I'm sitting this fucking bridge for 50 minutes to see Jim goddamn Gaffigan. He better be fucking funny.
He has a show now.
Sure. He was at the Melody Tent last summer. My aunt was visiting.
Yeah.
And she was staying at Dunphy's.
Oh, nice.
And she went to pick up my aunt.
Uh-huh.
And Jim Gaffigan was there in the lobby.
No kidding.
And he was very nice.
Aw, you know, he is a nice guy.
He's very nice.
Yeah, he's normal. as they say.
I met Jim Gaffigan from the TV at Dunphy's, and he was wonderful.
He wasn't high on his hoss about his success.
Nope, he was wonderful.
He doesn't seem like someone who thinks it's success. He's just still shooting for success.
He just
like that
does
kid.
What he does.
Yeah. He's Jim it's Gaffigan.
Like putting, it's like putting it in the air conditioner. He does what it does. Sly Stone, same thing.
It's pudding skin. It's going to happen. You it's can't really prevent skin, it. But when you lift it, love it, there's something under it that's nice.
See, I would take the whole skin. Yeah. As a child, I would think, if I could just get a crudité of pudding skin, I would be so much happier. Because
can you imagine opening your lunchbox? Like oh, five kinds of pudding skin. Well, Mom.
Because there's a tactile challenge to it. Totally. It's like eating a delicious belt.
I wonder if anyone's ever made pudding skin belts.
Pudding skin is like the skin on a fried chicken. I'd much rather have the skin than the chicken.
Yeah, it's more tasty.
It's just something about the crunch.
Yeah, and you wonder, how thick could it get?
Not to be confused with
Jell-O.
Skin on like salad dressing in a bowl. Like when yeah. your aunt like puts salad, like you have a little bowl of tartar sauce.
Yeah.
And then just throw it fucking away.
Yeah, get rid of it.
And people say, well, I'll put saran wrap on it, and then I'll throw everything away in 4 days.
But you know, when anything
it's starting
you,
to moan.
Yeah, now your tartar sauce smells like everything else in the fridge.
Yeah.
It ain't good.
And it has an exoskeleton.
Yeah, that's never good.
A hot exoskeleton of chive and mayonnaise. Just throw, man up and throw it the fuck away.
It is. I am a hoarder, not a food. But I am a hoarder of certain things. You know, I love chairs.
Of course.
But, you know, I can't help it. I got 30 chairs I don't use, and exactly. I'm still picking one up off the street. Like, that's my chair.
That's my chair.
Yeah, it's weird. You're but,
two cars on the street because your garage is full of chairs.
Yeah, but if you don't get rid of the old yogurt in the back of your fridge, you got no room to put kale in.
Yes.
You know?
It starts to grumble.
It's totally like us.
Yeah.
It's not happy.
Yeah. It starts to moan.
Can't help us.
Political Talk with two guys from Boston. More to come from the Dana Gould Hour.
1968. Now, it is true that this election is one for the record books. I don't think in our history a major party has put up someone to run for our nation's highest office as uniquely unfit and unqualified as that Dr. Zayas lookalike that we have running for the Republican Party. But I don't think this is the craziest election in our history. In fact, I don't think anything that has happened this year can compare to the lunacy of the presidential election in 1968. If the United States could survive the year 1968, I think we will make it until global warming takes us down. January 20th, 1961, and John Fitzgerald Kennedy, just 43 years old, is sworn in as the 35th President of the United States. Following the button-down conservatism of the 1950s and the Eisenhower administration, Kennedy's youth and vigor, or at least the appearance of his youth and vigor, he was actually riddled with Addison's disease and his spine was made of popcorn, but the Kennedy administration symbolized a new era for the United States. As America entered the decade of the 1960s, it was astride the world, an economic and military superpower. Just 8 years later, the very fabric of our culture seemed to be coming apart at the seams. Lyndon Johnson, John F. Kennedy's vice president, who succeeded him into the presidency after Kennedy's assassination in 1963, won a landslide election against his Republican challenger, Barry Goldwater, in 1964, winning 44 of 50 states. Johnson's first official term as president was freakishly productive. His Great Society program included laws upholding civil rights, Medicare, Medicaid, environmental protection, aid to education, and the abolition of poverty. He signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and 1968, outlawing most forms of racial segregation and providing equal housing opportunities regardless of race, creed, or national origin. He passed the Voting Rights Act of 1965, outlawing discrimination in voting. These were massive, massive, massive accomplishments that Kennedy tried and failed to push through a reluctant Congress. But it was beyond America's shores where Johnson inadvertently sowed the seeds of his own destruction. Lyndon Johnson drastically escalated America's involvement in Vietnam, following the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which stemmed from two incidents in 1964, one on August 2nd and one on August 4th, in which the USS destroyer Maddox claimed to have come under fire from North Vietnamese torpedo boats in the Gulf of Tonkin. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution gave President Johnson authorization, without a formal declaration of war by Congress, for the use of conventional military force in Southeast Asia. In other words, an incident happened that prompted Congress to cede its authority to declare war to the President of the United States. It must have been a pretty impressive incident. Actually, in 2003, then-Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara admitted that the first incident on August 2nd resulted in exactly one bullet hole in the hull of the Maddox, and that the second incident on August 4th never occurred at all. Another fun fact. One of the naval commanders in the Gulf of Tonkin at that time was Commander George Stephen Morrison, whose son Jim would become the lead singer of The Doors. Two ghosts haunted Lyndon Johnson throughout his first term. One was Vietnam, which grew like a cancer, but still enjoyed public support due to consistent rosy reports from the government and a steady stream of promises that the enemy was weakening, the tide was turning. The other ghost was that of his predecessor, John F. Kennedy, in the very living form of Kennedy's brother Robert. If there is one thing that everyone agrees on, it is that Lyndon Johnson and Robert Kennedy hated each other. Hated. Viscerally, emotionally, physically hated each other. The root of this antipathy was one fateful evening in Los Angeles during the 1960 Democratic Convention. Lyndon Johnson was a strong, conservative Democrat. The Democratic Party at that time was composed of two wings, the Northern Liberal Democrats and the Southern Conservative Democrats, or Dixiecrats. Johnson was a Dixiecrat. He was from Texas, and as the House of Representatives during the Eisenhower administration was arguably the most powerful man in Washington, D.C., some would say more so than Eisenhower. And Johnson single-handedly ripped the teeth out of the early attempts at civil rights legislation that Eisenhower put forward during the 1950s, these to please his constituents, the Dixiecrats. The Dixiecrats were Southern Democrats, loyal to Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal, but staunchly, staunchly, staunchly opposed to civil rights. This made Lyndon Johnson the bane of the Northern liberal wing of the Democratic Party, many of whom were Kennedy's closest advisors. But Kennedy, never as liberal as his advisors pretended he was, and as cunning and pragmatic a politician as any, wanted to actually win. And he knew he needed to carry the South to do it. But still, the story goes, after John F. Kennedy offered the vice presidency to Lyndon Johnson, and Lyndon Johnson accepted, John F. Kennedy's advisors lost their collective shit. And Robert Kennedy, JFK's campaign manager, was sent down to Johnson's room to personally ask if Johnson would allow John F. Kennedy to take the offer back. Was Robert Kennedy acting alone? Highly unlikely, to the point of being ludicrous. Did JFK have second thoughts? Much more likely. But Johnson told Bobby bluntly that if John Kennedy wanted to rescind his offer, he'd have to walk down there and do it himself. JFK backed down, and Johnson became the vice president. One Lee Harvey Oswald later, Johnson became the president. And that, to Robert Kennedy, was the definition of adding insult to injury. But Robert Kennedy did not go softly into that good night. He resigned his post as Attorney General, which was the job he held under John F. Kennedy, eventually running for Senate. Robert Kennedy had three homes. He was from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. His family had a home in Palm Beach, Florida, and he had a home in Virginia. So naturally, he ran for Senate in New York, holding the seat that Hillary Clinton would later occupy. And it was from there, from his seat in the Senate, during Johnson's first term, that Robert Kennedy and JFK's old cabinet members formed something of a government in exile, shadowing and second-guessing Lyndon Johnson's every move. Johnson, for his part, was driven absolutely apeshit by this, especially when it came to Vietnam. In fact, Johnson ran his policy in Vietnam not only on what he thought was the wisest thing to do at the time, but on what he thought would be the most difficult move for Robert Kennedy to criticize. Still, up into 1967, it was unthinkable that Lyndon Johnson would not run for and probably win re-election. But by only 1968, it seemed the entire world was falling apart. As we are seeing today, change is hard. And social change is exquisitely hard. And it is usually accompanied by a backlash and unintended consequences. The 1960s saw massive upheavals in the social fabric of America. By the late 1960s, historic civil rights legislation had been passed because of the grassroots civil rights movement led by Dr. Martin Luther King. But it was Lyndon Johnson's unimaginable will and legislative genius that actually got the thing passed and written into law. But that was just the beginning. It resulted in massive pushback by a frightened and angry white establishment and the self-righteous anger of long-oppressed African Americans. August 11th, 1965, Los Angeles, California. An African American man is arrested for drunk driving. A minor roadside argument breaks out, and this escalates into a fight. The community reacts in outrage as allegations of police brutality soon spread. And what follows is 6 days of looting and arson. The Los Angeles police needed the support of nearly 4,000 members of the National Guard to quell the riot, known as the Watts Riot. It resulted in 34 deaths and over $40 million in property damage. Race riots also rocked Detroit and Newark. The Black Panthers were formed, a paramilitary group of African Americans who, unlike Martin Luther King, did not rule out violence as a means to an end. Fun side note, some of the most progressive gun rights legislation in California history was put on the books by then-Governor Ronald Reagan, who, in 1967, with the help of the NRA, passed the Mulford Act, which repealed the law allowing the open carry of a loaded firearm. Why did they do this? It was in direct response to the Black Panthers' funny habit of marching in formation with loaded rifles. Dr. Martin Luther King, meanwhile, had begun to wisely conflate the plight of African Americans with the injustices inflicted on another group of non-whites halfway around the world.
The world now demands a maturity of America that we may not be able to achieve. It demands that we admit that we have been wrong from the beginning of our adventure in Vietnam, that we have been detrimental to the life of the Vietnamese people.
But the public had been pacified by constant reports that the war in Vietnam was slowly winding down. The tide was turning, the American public was told. The enemy is growing weary. There is light at the end of the tunnel. And then it was all revealed to be bullshit. On January 30th, 1968, during the Vietnamese holiday of Tet, North Vietnamese forces made a massive coordinated assault on over 100 South Vietnamese cities. Over 8 weeks of brutal fighting, American forces managed to repel the attacks, inflicting massive casualties on the North, but the damage had been done. The American public was slowly beginning to realize that the enemy was not tiring, the tide was not turning, and the light at the end of the tunnel was just more enemy gunfire. The American public, led by a social revolt of college students, accelerated its criticism of the war and of Lyndon Johnson. This was the cruelest. Lyndon Johnson inherited the war in Vietnam from John F. Kennedy, who inherited it as a police action from Dwight Eisenhower. John F. Kennedy's dream was his Great Society program, the War on Poverty in America, his battery of progressive social programs. But although Johnson had no fire in his belly to fight the war in Vietnam, nor could he stomach the idea of losing it. He saw himself going down in history as the first American president to lose a war he did not even start. The idea of Robert Kennedy accusing Johnson of not being man enough to win the war his brother bequeathed him was unbearable. In fact, as stated, much of Johnson's conduct of the war was done specifically to prevent criticism from Robert Kennedy. As a result, hundreds of thousands of anti-war protesters flooded Washington, D.C. One of their more popular chants, "Hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?" The Vietnam War revealed to be a lie, Johnson suffered massive blows from civil unrest at home. Disaffected Democrats began casting a vote for someone, anyone, to challenge Johnson for the Democratic nomination in 1968. They turned to Robert Kennedy. For Robert Kennedy, this was agony. No one in the history of American public life has changed, personally changed, as much as Robert Kennedy did between the years of 1964 and 1968, at least in terms of that change being carried out in public. Following his brother John's murder, Kennedy wandered through a prolonged dark night of the soul like no other. Once considered cold, sharp, moralistic, and condescending, because he was, his nickname after all was Ruthless Bobby, in the years following JFK's assassination, Robert Kennedy turned himself inside out, searching for some elusive meaning to the tragedy and, finding none, evolving into a much more sympathetic and empathetic person. Haunted by the existential question, how can God exist in a world where children suffer, the former Ruthless Bobby set out to single-handedly end as much suffering as his 5-foot-10-inch, 155-pound frame would allow. During his years in the Senate, Bobby Kennedy was more likely to be found touring a ghetto or the slums of Appalachia, news cameras in tow, alerting the world to the suffering of children and the poor right here in America. He spoke passionately on behalf of the dispossessed. After touring the home of a poor family in Mississippi, visibly moved, he spoke to reporters. Imagine any politician today walking into a poor family's home and then walking out, speaking off the cuff with this kind of feeling.
What we have here, of course, is a considerable amount of hunger. We have the children with distended stomachs. In the large cities of the country, particularly in the north, where there is poverty, still people can live on welfare so that the children don't suffer. Here, children as well as grown-ups are suffering. And as well as the housing being, of course, completely inadequate and without any schooling because of the fact that the children have insufficient clothing. So, as I say, I think it's a terrible reflection on our society. I think that one of the great problems is for most of us as American citizens, we don't run across it. We don't, for a citizen living under reasonably good conditions in our big cities, we don't pass through Bedford-Stuyvesant. We don't pass through Harlem. For a citizen living here in the state of Mississippi, you don't ordinarily run up against, if you're doing reasonably well, you don't run up against this kind of poverty. And certainly people in the elsewhere in the country have very little personal knowledge or information about it. But it exists, and it seems to me that we should do something about it.
In Delano, California, grape pickers went on strike. Now, the sheriff of Delano County had a peculiar way of dealing with the strike. He arrested all of the striking workers, and when pressed as to why, said it was for their own protection. Robert Kennedy, senator from New York, he had no issue with these dudes in California, but moved by their plight, investigated it, and would have none of it.
How can you go arrest somebody if they haven't violated the law?
They're ready to violate the law. In other words...
Could I suggest in the interim period of time, in the luncheon period of time, that the sheriff and the district attorney read the Constitution of the United States?
But for many, the idea of Ruthless Bobby would not go away. And he knew that were he to challenge Lyndon Johnson, it would not be seen as a debate over whether or not the United States should continue its same policy in Vietnam. It would be personal. RFK taking the presidency back on behalf of his slain brother JFK from that interloper LBJ. On the PDQ, like an angry MF-er. And this would put the all-powerful Lyndon Johnson into the position of the underdog. The way Bobby Kennedy saw it, by challenging Lyndon Johnson, he would assure Johnson's victory. They say the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in times of urgency, maintain their neutrality. One can imagine the only place in hell that would be hotter would be for those maintaining their neutrality against their own will. Enter Eugene McCarthy. Who? Eugene McCarthy, senator from Minnesota.
Where?
Minnesota. Soft-spoken, intellectual, he was, after all, in addition to being a senator, a real professional poet. So, you know, he was pulling down that big poetry money. In a scene out of Don Quixote, the quiet, soft-spoken Eugene McCarthy challenged the great Lyndon Johnson, human volcano, for the presidential nomination in 1968. Somewhere, Robert Kennedy kicked himself. Eugene McCarthy beat him to it. McCarthy first faced off with Lyndon Johnson on March 12, 1968, in the New Hampshire primary. Now, sometime just before the primary, Robert Kennedy emerged from his fog and decided that he had to run. He had to challenge Lyndon Johnson. Had to. But he couldn't run against Johnson and McCarthy for fear of splitting the opposition vote. He figured he would wait until after the New Hampshire primary, where McCarthy was sure to get his clock cleaned, and then make the case that he was much better positioned to defeat Lyndon Johnson for the nomination. Then McCarthy would drop out and endorse Kennedy as Johnson's rival. McCarthy, it turns out, did not win the New Hampshire primary, but nor did he get his clock cleaned. In a stunner, Senator Eugene McCarthy, who 2 months ago was basically anonymous, took 42% of the vote against President Johnson's 49% of the vote. This was an unheard-of result for a man who just 3 years ago had won 44 of 50 states. The Democratic Party turned itself inside out. Kennedy still considered making his case to McCarthy, but McCarthy, quite rightly, had no reason to listen. And on March 16th, Robert Kennedy threw his own hat into the ring, but still, as you can hear in his speech, had to go out of his way to stress it was not personal. Trust me, this isn't personal. Listen to this.
I am announcing today my candidacy for the presidency of the United States. I do not run for the presidency merely to oppose any man, but to propose new policies. My decision reflects no personal animosity or disrespect toward President Johnson. The issue is not personal. It is our profound differences over where we are heading and what we want to accomplish.
The remainder of 1968 reads like a series of socio-political cluster bombs going off one after another in too rapid a succession for people to absorb their impact before another bomb went off in their face. On March 31st, 1968, Lyndon Johnson stunned the country.
I shall not seek, and I will not accept, the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
On April 4th, Martin Luther King was assassinated. Anguished African Americans rioted. It was the greatest wave of social unrest in the United States since the Civil War. Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Chicago, Newark, Kansas City, burned. Campaigning in Indianapolis for the Indiana primary, Robert Kennedy spoke to a large African-American crowd that had not yet heard the news. he had to tell them and read an impromptu speech he had written in the car.
I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country, in greater polarization, black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand, compassion, and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God."
Indianapolis was one of the few major American cities that evening that did not experience rioting. I don't know of any politician today, black or white, who could have made that speech, much less written it in the car. On April 27th, Lyndon Johnson's vice president, Hubert Humphrey, entered the race. It was now a three-man run for the Democratic nomination. May 7th, Robert Kennedy won the Indiana primary. May 14th, Robert Kennedy won the Nebraska primary. May 28th, Eugene McCarthy upsets Kennedy, beating him in Oregon. It was the first time in history a Kennedy lost a major election. But on June 5th, Kennedy bounced back, winning the California primary, which did not assure him the nomination, but put him well on the path. It was not to be. Leaving his victory rally at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, Kennedy was being escorted out of the building through the kitchen when an assassin pulled a gun. Robert Kennedy was carried from the Ambassador Hotel on a stretcher and died the next day. The Democratic Convention in Chicago was a disaster of historic proportions. Anti-war protesters, seeing no hope for an end to the madness in Vietnam, in shock from the deaths of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy, filled the streets of Chicago. The Chicago police, under the orders of Chicago Mayor Richard Daley, responded with batons, attack dogs, and tear gas. In a speech on the floor of the convention, Senator Abe Ribicoff decried the Gestapo tactics of the Chicago police. Mayor Daley could clearly be seen telling him to go fuck himself. It was all on television. The nation was horrified. If you are wondering what Hillary Clinton is doing now, you need only look at what the Republicans were doing in 1968. When your opponent is beating the shit out of himself, stay out of their way. Richard Nixon, after serving 8 years as Eisenhower's vice president, after losing a razor-close election to JFK in 1960, some say it was stolen. Some say Kennedy only won Illinois because the same Mayor Daley helped a lot of dead people vote. Richard Nixon, who then in 1962 ran for governor of California and lost, who was considered dead, gone, a political corpse. Richard Nixon beat back challenges from New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller and gun control-loving California Governor Ronald Reagan. Richard Nixon secured the Republican nomination, beat Hubert Humphrey, and became the 37th president of the United States. And from there, everything was perfect.
Good evening. I want to talk to you tonight from my heart on a subject of deep concern to every American. In recent months, members of my administration and officials of the Committee for the Re-election of the President, including some of my closest friends and most trusted aides, have been charged with involvement in what has come to be known as the Watergate affair.
Now, say you want to learn more about the tumultuous election of 1968, if only to put the current shit show into perspective. Might I suggest some amazing books? Mutual Contempt by Jeff Schessel, S-H-E-S-O-L. It tells the story of the hate affair between RFK and LBJ. There's also The Last Campaign, Robert Kennedy and 82 Days That Inspired America. And of course, The Making of the President, 1968, by Theodore White. What I find fascinating about these books is it helps with the realization that all of this crazy bullshit, it's all happened before in different forms, and somehow we survived. Where do you get this stuff? You clicky-clack your keyboard to danagould.com, hit our Amazon banner, and shop away. You get what you want, and for no extra charge, we get a couple extra beans to keep the lights on here at home. Also, on the homepage of danagould.com, you'll see options to donate to the show or subscribe through PayPal. Every cent goes back into the show. Please know we appreciate what, if anything, you can do. But that's not all. You can also visit our store at comedyfilmnerds.com for Bevilacqua Heating and Air Conditioning t-shirts, Dana Gould Hour t-shirts, signed vinyl copies of Funhouse, Let Me Put My Thoughts in You, and soon, I Know What's Wrong, coming on vinyl. Signed CDs, DVDs, Dana Gould Hour posters, French toast, t-shirts, scuba gear, all signed by me. Just in time for your Halloween gift giving. All available at store.comedyfilmnerds.com. Boy, after pimping out all that bullshit, I'm tired. I feel like I should maybe go lay down. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the average price. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the customer. And Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Mattresses can often cost well over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost just $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foam to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. And if you didn't see the Sleep Surface Award show this year, you missed a big one. All Casper mattresses are made in America. Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. An award-winning mattress that won't disappoint. Try Casper for 100 nights, risk-free in your own home. And if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you for everything. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com and using the promo code Dana.
They come from miles to enjoy our intermission.
You see, way back in the 1600s, Willard's Mill had a constable named Thaddeus Eccles. You know the witch trials down in Salem, right? You know how many witches they burned down there? 20. You know how many witches Thaddeus Eccles burned in Willard's Mill? 172.
One person burned 172 people for witchcraft?
One sheriff. And ever since, Every sheriff we've ever had has died an early, violent, horrible death.
Okay, so I'm as good as dead, and I shouldn't enter the pie contest?
Stand against evil, November 2nd on IFC.
And now, on with the show.
There is a big strain of ugliness that I don't think you really saw and appreciated, that I don't know if the internet has exposed it, or there's a talk radio host in Wisconsin named Charlie Sykes, and he is a conservative talk radio host, and he realized, and he's a very, very anti-Trump. Like, very anti-Trump.
Right.
Because Trump's not a conservative. He literally hijacked the party.
Yes.
And he's the only guy that said, you know, I hear this shit coming out of my listeners' mouths that I'm wondering, like, have I enabled this? There was a guy in Wisconsin that was running against Paul Ryan. I think his name was Nealon, to challenge Paul Ryan for his congressional seat, even though he's the Speaker of the House. And the only way he could do it was he ran to the right of Paul Ryan. So hoping to get the Trump supporters, he came out with, I think we should ban all Muslims and kick American Muslims out.
Oh my God.
You know, and people supported the idea.
Even though he doesn't believe it likely.
No, of course not. Yeah. And it's unconstitutional. Yeah, it's all these people.
It's a totally impossible
it's
thing.
It's all these people that are talking about the Constitution. Yes. Read the Constitution. They wouldn't know the Constitution if it climbed up into their asshole and opened up a 7-Eleven in their lower intestine. and he had to realize, have I been a part of this? And I think
so. He was having like a crisis of conscience on the air.
Well, no, and it's ongoing. It's ongoing. One of the reasons I think that you get Trump is that for years, right-wing media and even the congressional Republicans have been making people promises that they can't fulfill.
Completely, yeah.
You know, you're not going to repeal Obamacare, because Obama, even if you got the votes, which you didn't have, he would veto it. So for 4 years, you've been telling people something that you know you're not going to do, but you do it to get them all amped up.
Right.
And then you can't whip people into a frenzy and then expect them to suddenly be rational.
Exactly. Yeah.
You spend, in this case, 8 years telling people that the president of the United States is a covert Muslim terrorist.
Right. Who hates America.
Who hates and is going to force you to get dental insurance.
Yeah.
Those people don't just calm down and become rational. Later.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
And yeah, Trump himself, I can't imagine actually believes that the $1 billion wall is going to be built. Like, well, it's the same. He won't be allowed to do that. I think he's just saying it to rile
two things.
These people.
One, he's not a billionaire.
No.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that he won't release his taxes is that I think it's very possible that
$10 million is okay.
Right.
It's very possible that he has less than that. It's lightly possible that he has a couple $1 million. The reason that he's so tied into Russia is because American banks won't deal with him anymore. Because he's had so many bankruptcies.
Isn't the Russian angle so fascinating? This is like Rocky IV shit. Isn't that Russian angle so fascinating?
Yeah.
The reason that
he's
so nice.
When all that came out, I was like, what? How did this get weirder?
With Russia is because they fund all of his baloney. And there's that. And it's also, I think, that he goes home at night and laughs his ass off. Because he doesn't believe a fucking thing.
Right. Well, all I had to see was a handful of interviews from him in the early 90s where he's like, if I were to ever run, it would be Republican, because you can talk those idiots and you can rile them up the easiest.
Yeah.
Because they're the most simple-minded. That's not verbatim,
that's very close to what he said.
Basically what he said and what he still believes. He didn't change his mind.
Or he's come to believe his own mojo.
Intelligence-wise, because I read the super long, I think it was in the New Yorker, they did a profile on, like, a guy who had been interviewing him in New York for years and years and years.
Howard Stern?
It was just this really interesting article about him and his personality type and how his obsessive quest for respect, I'm doing air quotes, because I've known people like that too, where they're, his whole life he's been a rich guy, but he's always been on the outside of everything, including like the New York York social elite in the 80s. And so even though he was technically a rich, successful guy, like even the rich, successful people were like, you're a loser, dude. We don't want to hang out with you. Right. And so his entire life is like knocking on the door of like, me too, right, guys? And even when he
That's why, as Greg Proop said, the thing that really burned him was when all the rich guys came out against him, when Michael Bloomberg and...
Yes. So even when he bought his estate in Florida, the real estate is in this place that's nothing but super rich socialist. And they were like, we don't want that guy here. Yeah. He's corny. Not a classy rich person like we are. And he bought it anyway and was like, fuck you guys. And would like play loud music. Like he's just obsessed with trying to get
in. Rodney Dangerfield and Caddyshack.
He bought this Mar-a-Lago resort. And then the first thing he did was put a flagpole on it that broke the regulations of the neighborhood.
And
then he sued the city.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like this constant quest of wanting to be one of the elite and wanting to have the respect, but doing it in such a petty way. This campaign is just the ultimate, like, I'll get respect if it's the last thing I do, including fakey running for president.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, well, if I get this far, all you socialites have to respect me, when they're all going, no, you're even cornier now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Don't you get, you'll never have our respect no matter what you do.
Yeah.
And it's the personality type not realizing that, thinking that respect is a thing like a test. If you study enough, you'll pass the test. When it's like, no, it's a thing you're never going to have.
Well, it's just the traits of clinical narcissism.
Yeah.
And everybody who is the president of the United States has narcissism.
Of course. Completely.
Only like, who should have the most difficult job on earth?
Right.
Me.
Me, exactly.
But he has a clinical, pathological narcissism that is so transparent.
Yes.
That it's mind-boggling. I don't know if he is psychologically capable of processing that he has lost, and I think that when he loses, and he will lose, and he's going to lose big, I wonder if he will either A, say it was rigged, say they were never going to give it to us.
He's already started saying that, and riles people up.
Yeah. Or he's going to come out on stage, not say a word, and rape an eagle.
Silently. That's the only way you can do it. Sinister and silent.
Staring into the camera.
Just like a fleshlight.
Yeah.
Sorry. You know what I'm sorry.
No, a fleshlight is... they were in the welcoming bag of the Just for Laughs festival or some comedy festival
I went to.
Really?
Oh, no. Oh,
and I literally took it out of the bag and went,
did you try it? Listen, we got them free when I worked at Chelsea Lately, and I gave one
what
to an ex-boyfriend.
What are they and why light?
And he said it was kind of rad.
Why light?
It works.
It's because, remember when I had a can of Aquanet where you twist off the bottom and it's a safe? It's just so when it's on the mantle, it's like, oh, a flashlight. But then it's like, no, not
this
flashlight.
It's a fake vagina inside.
It's got a vagina thing in it, and you act like, oh, I can't find my keys, I guess. If it gets down to someone walking in on you, you can just like, oh, I just am holding this flashlight.
Sorry, I'm dating this flashlight.
Yeah.
But is there a receptacle?
Yes, it's like long enough to fuck it. It's
but
like
how
a
do you
fake vagina.
Clean it out after.
Exactly. That's why my ex was like, I only used it once. Because he's like, I'm not going to clean it out.
I've never even seen one. I'm going to say, oh, you twist it and hose it
off.
I don't know.
Well, I don't know how you clean out the inside of it.
Yeah.
That I can't answer.
It's full of old jizz is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Well, now I don't want one.
We've talked you out of it.
Yeah. Or it could be you leave it in there, and then over a series of 100 years, it becomes a pearl.
Yeah.
And you can have a necklace of old of 90s comedians' jizz.
But it's a pearl. It's not a round pearl. It's shaped like one of those Mardi Gras babies. Like a little
king,
baby jewel.
The king cake.
A little king cake baby. Yeah. But pearlescent.
Oh
my God.
I can't stop thinking about baby ghosts. The show I did in Vancouver was in a theater that was called Fox Cabaret, and it used to be one of the people in the improv group said that they had, it was a porn theater, and at the ends of each aisle there was Kleenex.
No.
Which means you had to, stranger, could you pass? I made a heck of a mess here.
No.
and then they passed, like they each one didn't have
Excuse
Kleenex.
Me, my weenie sneezed. Might I have a tissue?
A tissue.
I thought you meant at the end of the aisle, like at the bottom of the theater in front of the screen on the floor, because it's a raked floor. It just had like a drain, like
gosh,
like it just had like a gutter. like can on I, your roof. Listen, and it's full of jizz and dead leaves.
To make this full circle, just because this is one of my favorite jokes ever in history, Chip Pope, one of my favorite jokes, as he talks about, he was like, I went to a porn theater the other day. Man, they really got to get rid of that stadium seating. He was like, it was messy. I had to wear a raincoat. That's one of my favorite jokes.
Do they still have those?
Yeah, Studs down the street from my house. It's still open.
But that's
used to be called the Tomcat.
Used to be
really
called, well. Before that, it was the Pussycat.
Oh,
it's Studs now, and it's still operating for business.
Genres?
Yeah, it changed its sexual.
Wait a minute! Oh, wow. It did.
Yeah, that used to be the Pussycat.
I lived,
but it's in West. It's in the gayest place of all time.
And then it became the Tomcat.
Right.
And when my parents were visiting, we were driving through West Hollywood. By then, it was the Tomcat.
Right.
And my mother went to my dad, Kenny, what's that? And my dad just went, it's a porno theater for queers.
No!
And my mother went, what? He goes, yeah, queers, they have their own porno. And my mother went, oh?
Amazing.
Just imagining what it looks like.
Amazing.
In her head. I lived on Curzon in Santa Monica, right near there. And I think the quickest place to get away that was closed off from traffic was right behind my back window. Cause I'm the most non-homophobic human ever. I really am. But I would open the window and just two dudes would be fucking outside my window. Like, and I'd be like,
in your driveway?
Hey, fellas, come on now.
In the street?
It was a back window. There's like a liquor store, and then my apartment was there, and then there's an alley with a little parking lot, and the Tomcat was just two more businesses down.
Right.
And more than once, usually just making kisses. But, but one time, full throttle town.
Made kisses
all the way.
And you were
to
like,
ground down. And I was like, oh, like, guys, sirs. I'm sorry. And they're
Did
like,
you
oh,
say
we're sorry.
They were
it's
nice.
Okay. I'm sorry. We just all, we both said sorry. They said sorry. I said sorry. They said sorry. They stopped.
But why? Okay.
And then again, I was like, I'm sorry. I'm not a bigot. But why? they were drilling, just going to Drillsville.
So, but making turbo kisses.
Yes. Kisses on their BH with the dongs. Yeah. But
kisses on their behinds?
Their buttholes.
Oh, with
dongs. So if you can imagine the urethra having lipstick and perfect little lips and just going,
kiss my...
Listen, though.
Rapid fire.
Was the reason that you had to do this? Because it was like loud grunting?
Yeah, yeah.
And you couldn't sleep?
I mean, and it was hot out and I had my window open. It's like, well, this can't.
Okay.
So maybe a little bit, it's like...
It was a noise disturbance.
See, if you were a better person than you would have... thought, let me just help them finish faster. So yeah. I would have been like, hey, guys, no, don't stop. What if you guys are on a train and the power goes out and it's dark and then you just get him into a little story?
So it was a noise disturbance.
Now's a good time to also interject. I am enjoying this voyeuristically. Yeah. So carry on, boys.
Just scootle on. Or just like, I'm going to put on some polyester slacks. Ah! And they run away because of your bad style. Yeah. Just like some bad 70s joke.
Totally.
I'll tell you what I like is polyester. No! And they lose their boners. Cause
I like wearing black shoes with a brown belt.
No!
They explode.
Like
the Martians and Mars Attacks when they hear Slim Whitman.
A noise disturbance. And then I do love that they apologize to you.
Yeah.
That's
I tell
really
you what
sweet.
I like is oh, a I... shirt tucked into shorts. Boom!
Yeah.
They're out of here. I knew that would work. Rubbing my hands together.
Aww. Were they always
explain,
nice?
Explain my Foley work.
Anytime this happened, were the dudes nice?
Oh, the kissing time that I remember, I just said, hey, stop. And they're like, whatever. Like, they were more like.
No affection near my home.
Yeah, they were tough guy kissing. They were power. They were leather strap power tops. I know some of the words going in. I've been to a store. I was driving on Sunset and I saw in the display the most amazing leather. It looked like what the lead singer of Living Color, that band Living Cult of
Body
Person.
Glove.
Yeah, it was like a body
Corey.
Glove. But with a neon on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I kind of want that. But then I went in and it was a leather thing. That,
oh.
Yeah.
Would you really wear body glove?
What if I slowly came out on this podcast? just talking about. And I wanted to wear it, and I ended up getting this urethral shocker thing. But I,
but those guys, they were loud, really, but I kept watching.
Oh, by the way, funny story about the two guys fucking outside my apartment. They were both me.
They were both. Here's a yoga to get myself to kiss my own butt.
Joe Klein had a line in Time Magazine, and I've been using it all the time because it's so funny. Like, my whole family on my father's side is from Brooklyn, right? And they're all Jews. And I said, his line was, every Jew has an Uncle Bernie. I go, the Goyish, you guys think it's funny, it's cute. No one's ever spat at you at a party before. You're trying to eat your dinner, and no one's going, we need more gravy! You're not Jewish, you don't understand that there's fucking... He's just a shouty, screamy... What I can't abide about him is the scoldiness and the no sense of humor. You know, if I want a Jew, I want to, come on, be Chuck Schumer. You know, like every once in a while, I'm a zinger. Let me have one, you know. Do me a favor here.
No, it's
Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein have more of a sense of humor, and they're rich Jews. It's like, he's the humorless Jew. Yeah. And he moved to Vermont from Brooklyn.
I know.
Like, wow, what did Barney Frank call that? White flight. Barney Frank goes, that's white flight. No Jew moves from Brooklyn to Vermont. There's no other Jews there.
He's like a more male B. Arthur.
I mean, I'd like to think that he did it for all the right reasons.
I think he
but
did.
But then not being a Democrat 2 days after the convention.
Did he pull out? Well, see, that's
the thing. When
people were furious about the DNC not getting on his side, the DNC, let me piss off some Bernie bros. The DNC did its job, which was to do what it could to navigate the pools for the most electable Democrat. Bernie Sanders was not a Democrat until a week before he announced, and he resigned from the party 2 days after. The DNC is a partisan team player.
And Bernie, their job is to deliver a winning candidate.
Right. And if what was the name of the woman?
Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah. And if Debbie Wasserman Schultz, by the way, her last name sounds like a case at Nuremberg. Wasserman V. Schultz. if Rance Priebus was more like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, they wouldn't be stuck with that fucking carnival act.
Thank you. You know? They're talking they about pulled, Georgia, you know, being flipped.
If they had cut 12 of those lunatics out of the thing, and, you know, Jeb Bush would be winning.
Oh, my God. He was the worst candidate.
Jeb Bush, had he got the nomination, I bet he would have won.
What does it say about W's terms that Jeb got no traction whatsoever, having had a president who was wildly popular with the right, and they didn't see he did anything wrong by driving the economy of the world into the dumpster and just starting an unwinnable war that has lasted an extra, what are we into, 15 years now? On
an extra dozen years.
The revolution and Vietnam together, I don't think, have lasted as long as Afghanistan. But I agree with you.
Well, as I said, Afghanistan is where empires go to lose.
I could have told you that 1,000. The British, Alexander the Great, the Russians.
The Russians, 20 the years ago!
I was going to say, right? The Russians. I was 20 years old when they invaded. I remember it.
It's the plot of The Living Daylights, for God's sake.
Right, and people, you see, it is the plot of The Living Daylights. And Rambo 3. Yeah. The people who go,
And in The Living Daylights, James Bond's biggest pal is Osama bin Laden. It's this Oxford-educated Afghani.
The Living Daylights.
His buddy is bin Laden. Is this Oxford-educated Mujahideen fighter. It's basically James Bond helps bin Laden blow up a bridge.
Yeah. People keep saying, oh, Reagan stopped communism and all this. So it's like, the Russians stopped communism.
Yeah, the Russians stopped communism.
They blew so much money in Afghanistan, and they were there for 10 years, and it killed them.
Yeah.
It drained their economy. They took all their colonials, all the Kazakhs and Uzbeks, and they shot them down there, and they all got killed. And hey, you brought this on yourself. It wasn't because Reagan escalated the nukes and was such a great negotiator. Well, at a certain point, they had no more economy. People in Moscow were fucking, you know, what was Dersel joke? They just wanted a bar of soap that didn't have human bone in it.
Well, supposedly, Bush Sr.'s wise men said to
W after 9/11. This is a tragedy, but it is not a catastrophe. And they advocated the Munich approach of you quietly hunt them down and you kill them.
Right.
And they lost to, we're going to bring democracy to the world.
Mm-hmm. To a country that's barely holding on as a country. When it was attacked by the Russians, it was barely holding on as a country. And that every single giant empire that's gone up against Afghanistan has left their entire empire there.
What's amazing is the even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Right.
The best public explanation of the folly of that war is Trump's.
Yeah.
If you look at Sassy Trump, military genius, where he talks about they had a balance. Somebody wrote it for him. They had a balance of power. And then we upended the balance of power. And shit went crazy. That's what happens.
Right.
That's what happens when you upend the balance of power.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, the British, one of the worst losses they ever got handed to them was Afghanistan. They had entire, like, two divisions cut down on the retreat back.
Yeah. Oh, brutal.
Alexander was there for 2 or 3 years and couldn't fucking subdue the place. Yeah. And ended up marrying a princess from there. That was the beautiful Roxanne. Right. And then he fucked off to India and left a division of fucking Greeks there that hated it. They called it the Land of Bones. That's what the Greeks called it 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you're up against a bunch of goods who strike in the night. They come at you. They're gone.
Yeah.
And they fight with each other too.
No Marcus of Queensberry rules.
No.
We will meet at noon.
And they're born on horses, man. You know, they're born to fight in those mountains, man. Yeah. You're in their house.
Yeah.
The idea that you're going to, you know what, if we bomb them a lot, that'll work. No, it won't. Everybody's bombed them.
Yeah.
Everybody's bombed them.
No, it's really amazing. The other interesting thing is back to the narcissism of Trump. Because he is a narcissist, he can't not be the focus of the news cycle.
Which is making her win, I think.
And what he has done is pushed a lot of shit about her that has come out about sloppiness onto page 6.
Yeah.
Because he would rather talk about himself than her. And she, quite wisely, and this speaks well of her, is very happy to sit back and let him kill himself. You know, you don't see her rushing out, complaining that she's not getting any news coverage.
Mm-mm.
You don't see her complaining that she is very quietly with a ground game that he does not have.
That's the other thing. She's organized.
Yeah.
That's the most organized woman that ever lived.
Yeah. They are doing if you remember the Obama ground game during the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah.
When he was supposed to come in fifth or second.
Yeah, and he won.
And he won handily.
Yeah.
I think there is a possibility of a, not 1972, but a...
No, maybe not Johnson.
No, somewhere but maybe
not
in 84,
Reagan either.
Yeah, but
Johnson
but
had 500 electoral votes.
Yeah, yeah. No, but a victory
bigger than Clinton's first one.
A victory bigger than people are thinking it could be.
They're talking about Georgia being in play. They're talking about Utah being in play.
Yeah,
Colorado's already blue. They've already pulled their money from Colorado.
Right.
They're talking about Arizona being in play. You were in Georgia.
Yeah.
Georgia's staunch Dixie, you know, Louisiana, Mississippi. The last time Georgia carried a Democrat was Clinton in 92. But Clinton was a Southerner.
Right.
One.
And as was Al Gore.
Right. As was Al Gore. And then Obama carried North Carolina in 2008, but not in 2012.
Right.
And she's going to flip all those states back. Florida's hers. There's so many Latins that have moved into Florida in the last, you know, however many years.
What is his numbers in Florida?
Oh, I think he's like 6 or 7 points down, but I think it's going to be not that close.
Oh, he's down in Florida?
Yeah.
I thought he was up in Florida because he's always in Florida.
Well, but then he does crazy things like—
Is that because of the crazy, because that's where the craziest crackers are?
Yeah, one. But there's also an influx of something in the number of 500,000 Latins in the last, like, 5 years.
Right.
And
none of
them are polling at, what, 15% with Latins and 1% with black people?
Yeah.
He's under 2% with black people, who are 15% of the electorate.
In Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, which he must win.
It must. And he doesn't go there that
he
much.
He is at 0%.
Zero. How can you poll at zero? That means not even one person goes, like, I like you in a poll. Not one person. And then did you see Breitbart, who was so furious about all the polls, went out and hired Gavis to do a poll for him, right?
Like, I didn't see that.
It was yesterday. Breitbart,
who's running Breitbart now?
Well, I don't know who's running Breitbart. Some insane idiot, person who...
Yeah.
All right, let me not say insane. I said it was unfavorable to characterize people as insane. A fervent lunatic is a...
An enthusiast. A right-wing enthusiast.
Hired Gavis, who's a reputable polling organization. And I'm going to do my own poll.
Because I don't believe these polls.
I don't believe these. Fuck you, CBS and NBC and Harris and everybody else. I don't buy these polls. She had him by 6%. She had him by 6 points in the poll they conducted. So on Breitbart, on the front of the page, it says, Clinton leads Trump.
My friends moved to San Francisco in the mid-80s, right before the AIDS crisis really hit. And they did not know the city of San Francisco. And they apartment was at 14th and Castro, which was the
corner of gay and gayer.
Corner of gay and gayer. Yeah. Corner of actually gayest and gayester.
corner of butt and hole.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There really is a corner of Polk and Bush there.
Yes.
There
really?
Yeah. It's old. Robert Hawkins
is called
joke.
Polk Gulch. But within the first week of their moving there, And like a gross stereotype, like a 70s era stereotype, my friend saw a man hitting his boyfriend with a flute case.
No.
Going,
no.
What comes around goes around, mister, and you're going to get yours.
No.
But literally hitting him with a flute case like he's a professional.
That is like Noel Coward.
No,
or
I know. They might as well have been wearing leotards.
Yeah.
And hovering, hovering
mister.
Like 10 inches off the ground.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, yeah.
Oh, I want video of that.
It's
a beautiful thing.
That's a great overheard.
I've lived in West Hollywood deep in the heart of it for like 7 years now, and I've never had guys boning.
I've never seen a gay guy.
I've never had guys boning out. I'm like sad. I've never had guys boning outside my window.
It's funny. I stayed at this apartment in San Francisco, and I remember looking across the street into the apartment across the street where they had a large screen television, and I could not figure out what they were looking at and watching. And they realized it was like, oh, that's a guy's butt. And that's, oh. Yeah. So like the first time I saw gay porn was through a window across the street.
Right.
Literally looking at it for like 5 minutes trying to figure.
Binoculars.
I think it's porn, but I don't know exactly what's going on.
Oh.
Amazing.
No.
I will say
this. The second time I saw it, I was in their living room.
Yeah.
The second time I saw it,
I was on set. Exactly. My neighbor.
And both actors were me.
I like that. That's how. That's the ultimate. Is that it's you making love with yourself?
Yeah.
But really, isn't that just what masturbation is? Sorry, it's a weird time for me to touch your leg.
And then the show descended into a big sweaty fuck pile.
Just me watching. The lady who lives next door to me, though, in West Hollywood, I've always noticed she's called the Pink Lady around the neighborhood.
Oh, I know the Pink Lady.
Did you know that she was on, she lives next door to me, and I saw her all the time. I'm like, what's this lazy deal? And then one time I was flipping channels, and there was a Discovery Channel show called like My Strange Obsession or something, and she was on it because she was like, I refuse to have anything in my life that's not pink. And they showed the inside of her apartment where it's just nothing is not pink in it. Like, wow. She's like famous for being that lady. When I would just see her on the street.
But that's a level of psychosis.
Oh, it's crazy. But yeah.
The woman with the Corvette?
No, it's not Angeline.
That's Angeline.
It's okay, this lady who's got pink hair, only wears pink. Her dog's dyed pink. She has a pink Vespa. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they showed the inside of her apartment right next to mine, and the furniture's pink. The walls
are
pink.
Who's her favorite recording artist?
It was, but when I was watching it,
well, she loves
like,
the song Purple Rain.
that's the only way she's...
What a mom am I? My first thought was like, she's not getting her security deposit back. You can't paint your whole apartment pink. That's not allowed. And I was kind of jealous because I was
just go in and like
place.
Find like the pipes under the sink are still pipe colored. Like, oh, so these are silver,
I guess
does
not,
this bother you?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, midnight should be painted.
I guess you don't know anything about commitment. Yeah.
I guess you're just kind of half in, huh?
Yeah. That's the pink lady. They should a whole episode of that show.
Who was the weirdo in your hometown growing up?
I think you're talking to her. No, I don't really know. No, I don't really know. I didn't grow up in a small enough place for that to be a thing.
You didn't have like the town weirdo?
No, there was weird stuff. I can tell you a story, a crazy story that happened in my neighborhood. The kid.
This is neither the time nor the place.
The kid that lived next
to me. For an entertaining story.
I'm trying to think of how much to condense this, but like the kid that lived, there was this kid that lived right next door to me who was like two grades older than me, who kind of bullied me. Our bus stop for school was at the top of our neighborhood. And there were very few teenagers in my neighborhood. It was all like little kids. It was like me and like three other people. And this guy was older than me. And he like weirdly bullied me all the time. I mean, weirdly in the way that like he wasn't cool on the hierarchy, but I don't know. He was older than me and bigger than me, so he could just make fun of me. But at this bus stop once, I dropped my keys. I was a latchkey kid. I dropped mm-hmm. my keys. And so I got home and I was like, that day, I'm like, oh, I don't have my keys.
How old are you at this time?
I was probably like 15.
Okay.
And I had to go to the neighbors, call my mom. I can't get in the house, whatever. And she was like, that's insane. Somebody can have a key, whatever. So the next night, we went to dinner and we came home and our door was open. Our door was like cracked open. And I was like, oh, shit. And so we called the cops and everything. Yeah. And we went through that. Nothing was stolen. But my mom's underwear drawer had been gone through.
Oh, wow.
But like nothing was stolen. It just was cleared like somebody. And we're like, what? That happened like a couple days in
Why
a row.
Why would
we're
he
like,
want the clean ones?
Well, the,
sorry.
Well, that's the thing is we found. So we kept being like, what's going on?
The laundry bandit.
And we found out that it was that kid. Like he had taken my keys and just wanted to like scare us. And just would go, come in our Whoa. House and go, but never stole anything.
That's scary though.
Yeah, it was weird. And my mom had to go talk to his mom and she was like salty about it and was like, my son would never do that. And we're like, it's totally him. And then like, they ended up finding that he had my keys.
Oh, wow.
It was just the weirdest thing.
Did the
thing.
Mother ever apologize or cop to
No,
it?
She was super like, how dare you accuse me? You know what I mean? It was like, my son would never do anything wrong. Where my parents are the opposite. Yeah. If there was even a whiff of anything, my parents would come to me and go, why'd you do this?
Yeah,
and I'm like, I didn't even do it.
Right.
They
were,
if I came home from school and was like, somebody hates me and is making fun of me, my mom would go, what'd you do to make them hate you?
Right.
Oh, man.
Totally. That kid did a lot of weird stuff. And that was one of them.
Probably still lives.
Now, what happened to him?
Honestly, I don't know. Because he was older than me. After that, obviously, we never talked. My mom was like, make him stay away from my daughter.
Well, let's find him on Facebook.
Yeah. I don't remember his last name.
When I find out about a murder, and it's a news story, it's like so-and-so, I find him on Facebook.
Oh.
Because you can just look up the name, the city that the story comes from. There he is. And then I poke him. No, I don't poke. But you can. You can really.
Vigilante justice.
And then he pokes you back. Haunted laptop. It went from the apartment to my computer. I have a haunted travel mug.
I feel like that story is anticlimactic. That kid did a lot of other weird stuff too.
Yeah.
Did you ever like you grew up in Montana?
Yeah.
See, the weirder people are in the more wholesome places.
Yeah. Missoula is it's a little different from the rest of Montana. It's kind of
it's very
liberal.
Where you grew up is very Stranger Things.
Yeah, very much. God, it was even the bikes they rode combination with the banana seat, but you still put BMX bikes on or handlebars on.
Banana seat, with the sissy bar.
Oh man, it was the same. There was a woman called the Dragon Lady who wore all black and rode around on a Wizard of Oz bike. And she lived in this white house that was spray painted with satanic graffiti that I don't know if she did it, but maybe it was covered.
But she just didn't clean it
and
off.
She wore tons of eye makeup, all black, a black veil. She rode around on bikes and knew she was scaring kids. But my mom was like the sewer billing person. Like she knew who was or wasn't using their sewer. She was not hooked up to the city. She would burn her. In the fireplace. That's
Slow
all.
Down.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Up the brakes. She sat in her fireplace.
She was gross too, and she was like a gross scat witch. But there were.
That is my Riot Girl band, Scat Witch. We opened for L7.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's amazing.
That's my next TV show.
Scat Witch.
There was a story that a lot of people knew, though.
Vagina the Scat Witch.
You go to get, like, if you tried to open the gate, she'd hit your hand with a hammer. That was the story that everyone told.
Yeah, but go back to her shitting in the fireplace.
Was she young?
But my mom.
Or old?
Probably.
It'd be great if she looked like Blake Lively. Like, she's also nice, like, really, beautiful. Regally beautiful.
If I were able to go back in time, I bet I'd find out that, she was just mid-30s or something. But she seemed like a scary old lady because she just white face, makeup. And she lived in that house and she rode that bike around, wore all black. She is scary, but my mom insisted. That she was a sweet person that came in. She's like, I keep getting these bills and I don't want to be hooked up, so I've been taking care of it myself. I actually incinerate it. I have an incinerator. She was like very lot. She was like,
she didn't do a furnace?
Every time she talked to her, she was nice. She, my mom's like, I'm sort of friends with the dragon lady.
Did your mom call her the dragon?
No, no. She'd Gail or whatever her name was.
Gail. Gail the Scat Witch.
I brought a casserole. No, no, no. You can keep that shit finished.
Gail the Scat Witch, the scattiest witch you'll know.
That's me. Ding.
Totally. She uses her broom to fly around town and sweep her turds into the furnace.
It's a double-use broom. Oh my God.
Of course, I always cover it with plastic before I sweep my turds into the furnace, and that way when I fly around town, you don't smell turds.
Also, I use
Thanks, Gail.
A toilet brush. I don't use the toilet.
Yeah, what about, so wait a minute. If you are not, well, how else are they going to get there?
Squatting over the furnace.
I'm sure.
Like a mail chute. It goes directly into the furnace.
She had a lot of cats, too, so I was So it's like, maybe she just does a cat style and does it into a tray or some letterbox, puts it in there.
But her home had to have a toilet.
Yeah, where it just was not.
It just had police line, do not cross tape around it.
Maybe that was it. It had it only on sped, like on Christmas, you'd put the toilet or something.
But, my birthday's coming up. Might drop one in the toilet.
How does she think water?
She's like, why is my bill fluctuating? Why am I paying? Because I haven't used the toilet.
But that's my point. Sewer bills don't work like per turd. It's not like you pay like...
Billing, hi. I had some funky egg salad sandwich at my aunt's house. None of the people that I know who are supporting Trump are people of color.
Oh, no.
Nor are they people who have been in any way personally affected in the job market by an influx of illegal immigration. None of the people that I know are angry that they're not working as a nanny or
a gardener.
Yeah, or gardener.
Busboy.
Yeah, they're just not.
No. A shoeshine?
It's just a sad fact. It's just there's anger. And I think the news story is, well, they're angry because the economy has left them behind. Now, that's true. Starting in the 1980s, the American middle class has been eroded profoundly and brutally by the myth of trickle-down economics, which is interesting because even in its name, it's telling you you're getting fucked.
Yeah, you're not getting anything.
Yeah. We're going to give the wealthiest everything, and then you will get a trickle.
Yeah.
It doesn't even – they can't even call it flow down.
Right.
They just – no, it's just you'll get a trickle.
Right. Some money might drop between a crack.
Right. So I understand that. I think the other reason they are so full of anger is that every day they are fed propaganda by Drudge, Breitbart, AM Radio, and Fox News. Every day they are told shit that isn't true, and they are made promises that aren't going to happen. We're going to repeal Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
We're going no, no, you won't. It's not going anywhere.
No, it's not going out.
You know.
People are coming for your guns.
People are coming for your guns. Who? Obama's been president for 8 years.
It hasn't happened.
What's that?
Do you realize the laborious process to undo one of the amendments to the Constitution?
Yeah.
Do you know how long and how much that requires to undo the Second Amendment? It's not going to happen in any way, shape, or form. States might have smaller regulations or, you know, like Clinton had the assault ban for a while.
Right.
That got lifted.
Well, people want common sense gun legislation.
Yeah.
And they fly into a fury over the mention of the word common sense.
Yeah. No, none of the things that they're promised are going to happen.
Yeah. And
immigration isn't that big. 400,000 people have left the United States that are Mexican since 2009.
Yeah. The president is a Muslim terrorist.
A million and a half, is it? Something like that? Yeah.
The president is a Muslim terrorist. No, he's not.
No, he's a Harvard educated lawyer.
Yeah. And you can't keep, throwing, and they themselves are surprised when people believe it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Rance Priebus doesn't understand why his electorate isn't falling into line.
Yeah.
Because you've pushed them over the fucking edge. You know?
Well, now they're left with the dregs. I mean, because I don't think they really wanted this. When I think of the, you know, when we were kids, the Republicans were you know,
There was an intellectual wing. There was William F. Buckley. There was all those, the Bush family. There was all those nice, you know,
The Rockefellers?
Right. Nicely dressed rich people office rooms.
There's very little difference between Bill Clinton and Nelson Rockefeller in terms of their policies. Well, or JFK.
Absolutely.
Or JFK.
Clinton took the Republican agenda and made it his agenda.
Yeah.
He cut welfare. He balanced the budget. Right. He did what Reagan always promised to do. They never did. He actually did balance the budget by cutting people off the welfare rolls.
And raising taxes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, the whole idea that the fantastic current of white supremacy that attends this election.
Yeah.
It's so obvious that so many people were, it's just enough that he was black.
Yeah.
It rubbed them the wrong way. And then to follow up an accomplished, well-spoken, diligent, hardworking black person with an accomplished, diligent, hardworking woman is too much. It's just too much to bear. That's the straw that broke the camel's back.
I think you're right. I mean,
I just think for a lot of people, certainly some in my family, you know, I remember one of my relatives said to me years ago, he lived in Texas, and when Ann Richards was running against W and W beat her.
Yes.
He goes, Ann Richards is a bitch. And I went, let me get this straight. You live in a trailer.
Did you say?
Yeah. And I was like, does Bush come by with cookies and whatnot? What is it that makes her a bitch and makes him so effective?
Yeah.
In your mind, you know, but that's how they've, this one, it's the cage. You saw that in Ohio, the ISIS cage. They were running an anti-Hillary rally and they dressed someone up as Hillary in an orange jumpsuit and had her in a cage, much like ISIS uses to burn
people
to death. Yeah. And then they hang the bitch, shoot the bitch,
lock her up.
Yeah. I went to a Hillary rally and there were Bernie bots everywhere.
Right.
And they were chanting and screaming before we went in to see Hillary, burn the witch. And I'm like, you know, I love that you're on my side.
Yeah.
I thought we were all on the same side here.
Right.
When I hear you say burn the witch, that doesn't make me warm toward you.
No.
I didn't say burn the Jew, even though his slogan was feel the burn, which was the worst thing you could say about a Jew.
Right.
I never understood that fucking, no one thought that one through. He's Jewish and you're saying feel the burn. But they were yelling burn the witch. And I thought, so what's united you here is misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can slice it and dice it however you want. Oh, I know the Trans-Pacific Partnership fucked up your life so bad because you live in LA.
Right.
Like that, I didn't get it at all. If you have a legitimate gripe with her, I'd love to hear it. Saying burn the witch to me is, because I don't say kill Trump or shoot Trump.
No, no.
I've never say anything incendiary. And you know, we all tweet about politics and stuff like that, but I really refuse to keep him off my time, off my timeline. The other day I retweeted something that had his picture in it, and I think it was the first time I've ever done it.
Yeah.
I don't like to talk about him. I don't want to give him press. I don't want to reinforce it. And I never use profanity and go like, I see people tweet each other, you're a fucking retard, you fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Why don't you fucking shoot yourself? Like, whoa.
Yeah. No.
We don't need that.
Yeah.
In the face of Trumpism and demagoguery and
what
only can be described as white supremacy, you've got to calm down. And Michelle Obama had it right, you know?
Yeah. When they go down, when they go low, we go high.
And like you said about Hillary the last 2 weeks, I said to my wife 2 nights ago, she's very calmly, one, not tried to draw the attention back to herself, which is the best game plan of all.
Yeah.
And two, stumps furiously. Because when you get up against Putin and you get up against Xi from China and the big boys, they're mean and tough and hard and cold and it's you have to be able to know everything you're talking about. You come in like Trump with the, all right, everybody.
It would be insane.
Sit down.
Yeah. It would be.
It's sending your drunk uncle to fucking negotiate with them.
No, it would be.
There's not a world leader in the world.
They would love it.
Oh, they would. Talk about, this is the whole thing about Russia. They would love it because then they really could run wild in Europe. And now that Europe, because of England, the specter of right-wing nationalism, which was what NATO was supposed to protect against and what World War II was all about. And having England break off like that, we don't need Europe. The reason why there was only that crappy genocide 20 years ago in the Balkans was because most genocide's been contained since the war. You're the one continent where there isn't genocide every 2 fucking seconds.
Right.
But he didn't seem to understand that.
No.
We'll wrap this up. I don't want to keep you guys here all day.
I want to be here all day talking about
Gail the Turd.
Yes.
You guys didn't like Scat Witch.
Gail Scat Witch.
Scat Witch. Yes.
Skatwitch.
Yes. It's my favorite thing. And again, the idea of her, because that's what I go to when you were saying she kept going to the thing being like, you guys are charging me too much. Mm. Where she's like, I know how much I shit this month because I sweep it into the furnace and I refuse to pay.
I wish I could ask my mom about that. Yeah, I wish I could remember the details.
But outside of that, she was very profligate with her money.
Right. Yeah. She's just like, otherwise.
My mom.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if she was off the grid in other ways. Did she have like solar panels and
she
stuff?
She reminds me of like. Yeah, well, Myla Nurmi wouldn't sweep turds into the furnace,
it's
but
funny.
She's proudly off the grid.
Yeah, that part of town actually is called the grid because it is very much a grid-based. Maybe that's why they call it.
When
that's
she rode her bike, would she go...
No, she sang some Kermit the Frog song, actually, oddly.
Is she still alive and living in your...
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. What
I don't think so. I think even in my 20s, I went back home and it was just a regular house. I don't know where she went.
Do you think that house, whoever lives there now, is haunted by her turds? Ghosts of her
every
turds.
Every time they put a log in the fire, it tastes like your childhood ice cubes.
Oh, my God. That's the most perfect thing I've ever heard. The most beautiful bow that could have been tied on this conversation.
No, usually a fire is nice, but it's a new place. I just get this taste in my mouth.
Or they come down, just what a terrible thing to find in your fireplace on Christmas morning. God damn that Santa Claus. Just a giant dude in your fireplace. Well, he ate the cookies.
I guess we got our lump of coal. That guy needs to...
Kids, Santa's a magical being. He knows when you've been good, and he sees you when you're sleeping, and he shits in your fireplace.
Sorry. Sorry about that last part. Still be good, though.
With every log, it's just another brick in the permanence of your sense of wonder.
Oh, my face hurts. Oh, this is my favorite conversation I've ever had with anyone.
Santa left a turd under the mistletoe.
Co-starring Gail the Scat Witch. She's in the Christmas Story.
We had Harry Miller, who mowed the lawns at the cemetery. Actually, the character that I play in Stand Against Evil is based on Harry Miller. He just lived at the cemetery. He was the guy that ran the cemetery.
Right.
And
he just lived there alone?
Well, he was
a crypt keeper?
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked tad... Something wasn't right with Harry.
Did he look like Lurch from the Addams Family?
No, he looked a little Igor. I think he had maybe a genetic...
Sure.
Anomaly of some sort.
Sure. Scoliosis.
That made him so strong.
Yeah, I think he was a tad special needs, which is not what I'm doing in Stand Against Evil.
Come on, it could be your Gilbert Grape. No.
Forrest Gump that shit.
He had this suit, like his work clothes, and you would either see him in the cemetery or walking around town in his work clothes, talking to himself.
Wow.
He was probably born looking 40.
Right.
And he never, it was just like a permanent thing in the town. Like, I fully expect when I go home to still see him walking around.
Right. And you probably will.
There's Harry Miller.
Yeah.
And,
in ghost form.
Yeah. Harry Miller ghost form. Going over to Gail's house.
He's going to live in that cemetery for all eternity.
I have a weird obsession with those, like, small town.
Yeah.
Oddities.
For sure.
People like that. We also had, Francis, who was, A very old guy, wore a hat with ear flaps.
Fargo style.
Yeah, style, year round.
Yeah.
And, he was very, very, very old. He had like five teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just, he lived in the nursing home. And he would, you know, my town is like a size of Mayberry. And he would walk up behind the old ski toe hill where there used to be a old-timey ski toe, and pick blueberries, and then would just eat them on the way back. And you just see Francis walking around town, his face smeared with blueberries.
Oh, wow. That would freak me the hell out as a kid.
Yeah, he was there, and Harry Miller was there, and they would intersect. And then the other guy was named Dick Daig, and Dick Daig was just an oddball. He called us all Mr. Gould. How are you, Mr. Gould? How are you, Mr. Gould?
Even when you were like 9?
Totally. In fact, the story took place when I was 9.
Oh. Wow.
My brother Kevin and I were at the little store in town with our dog Coco, named after the girl from Fame. No. Coco was a German short-haired pointer. And we were in front of the store with Coco, and Dick Dade came by and went to, "Hey, Mr. Gould, nice looking dog you get there." And my brother goes, I was 9, so my brother was 14. Mm-hmm. And this is like the most amazing thing I'd ever seen in my life up to that point. My brother just went, "Yeah, I really like his balls." and Dick Dade,
what did
and
Dick I was say?
Like, and Dick Dade stopped and said, "What?" And my brother just goes, "Yeah, I like his balls. I like the way his balls hang there. His ears hang really low. I like his balls." And he's really like, "Oh, oh, oh." And to me, it was like my brother like turned into a Pegasus and started flying around.
Amazing.
I'd never seen like anybody talk like that to a grown up before.
I love that.
My brain shattered like I'm thinking Jiffy Pop.
That's great.
Yeah, I like his balls, like the way they hang there.
My brother's awesome.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
I think in small towns, those people look after, even if it's a crazy person at the end of the street, they're kind of taken care of. People take care of people in small communities. Because any of these people would be screaming at a parking meter in Los Angeles.
Right, and no one would pay attention. There was a guy that lived in a abandoned house, basically squatted in an abandoned house, and my brother would bring him like food and make sure he wasn't freezing in the winter and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can't raise kids.
He did that. He traded that for sexual favors.
I think about that all the time. There was a house
I don't have any kids. Crisis averted.
Don't worry about it. A house in Marietta Square that me and my friend Jeremy, I had known him since like sixth grade. And in high school, we hung out all the time. And he was my dude he was the king of anything I wanted to do that was weird. He's like, "I'm gay. Let's go drive to this weird thing." Totally. Let's do that. This is the most embarrassing thing. I never talk about this. I've told this to 3 people maybe my entire life, and I'm about to do it on permanent record. There was one night, Jeremy and I...
This is not you sweeping turds into a fireplace.
It's worse to me. Because as
you... "I'm Gail," she wailed.
"Oh, you look great."
Okay. One night, Jeremy and I, we used to want to stay up all the time, all night. Right after we graduated from high school, we both worked at Domino's Pizza for a while, and we would get off work, and we would just go drive around all night. And I'm ignorant. I've never done a drug. I've never had a sip of alcohol, any of those things. And I'm super ignorant to... One night, Jeremy was like, "Why don't we just have some no-dos so we'll stay up later?" And I'm an idiot. Like,
that's
I think no-dos...
already good.
To me, I'm like, "Oh, no-dos, totally." Because that's like drinking a bunch of Cokes, which I do anyway. So one night, he and I split an entire bottle of no-dos.
Oh, no.
And washed it down with Mountain Dew. And I'm like, "This is cool. This will just be like I just drank like a 6-pack of Coke in one go. Like, no problem." Yeah. So we did. We just like drove around, did all this crazy stuff, stayed up all night. I went home to my parents' house, and I was walking in the door as they were leaving to go to work. And they didn't care. I didn't have a curfew or anything. Like, they weren't bothered about that.
But how old were you at this time?
I was like 18. It was right after high school. And they were just like, "Hey, what's up?" And I was like, "Oh, I was just driving around with Jeremy all night." They're like, "Okay, we're going to work." And I'm like, "All right." And they're like, "Why are you still like super awake?" I'm like, "Oh, we took some no-dos." Like, I'm so dumb. I didn't know that was like a bad thing. And my mom's like, "Okay." Because I was so wired. And then so I tried to go lay down, and then... Didn't.
No.
I was just like, "Okay, I'm starting to get worried now." And then I barfed like 5,000 times. And then my parents got home from work, and I was that night. And I'm like, "What's up, guys?" And they're like, "How many no-dos did you have?" And I was like, "I split the entire bottle with Jeremy." And they were like, "Oh my God, we were going to the emergency room right now." And they took me to the emergency room. And the guy was just like, "What did you do?" And I was like, "I split a bottle of no-dos with my friend." And he goes, "You just had like 4 lines of cocaine. That's the equivalent of 4 huge lines of cocaine. Had you not barfed, we would be pumping your stomach right now."
Did he really say that?
I promise.
Just to give you something to compare it to?
Yeah.
You know.
Because I was like, what's the big deal? I swear to God. He said rails, but like,
This doctor wearing sunglasses?
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Because he was just popped the skim off my A flake.
I was like, "What's the big deal?" Because I was an idiot. Like,
what's in no dose?
It's just like cocaine. Pure caffeine.
Oh, okay.
But I took so much of it at one time that he was like, "You're lucky to be alive," essentially, because I'd never done anything.
Because you could have
died like that Jeremy kid last night.
I called Jeremy had done tons of drugs in high school.
You could have died like that poor scat witch.
He had done tons of drugs in high school,
she's a turd sweeping ghost.
I called him in the middle of the next day.
Sorry about that.
And he was fine. He was like, I'm
slept like a baby.
I was totally freaking out. I'm like, Jeremy, I'm freaking the fuck out. Like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, but he had tolerance. Yeah, I had no tolerance. I didn't sleep for like 4 days.
Oh, wow.
It was the scariest. I just sat staring in the at the ceiling in my bed. It was the scariest 4 days of my entire life. No, because I'd already like barfed up enough of it.
I've been to that point. I have had that just with my own lunacy, like, hey, I might never sleep again.
I truly was like, I'm never going to sleep again.
This is how I die.
Totally. Completely, yeah, completely.
That. I've had that.
That's the closest I've ever come to doing any sort of anything. Yeah, and I'm like, this is the worst feeling. I'm never going to sleep again. It was the worst. Worst, worst, worst. So technically, I've done cocaine.
That's not the most embarrassing story.
It is for me. When I told the doctor what I had done, he was just like, are you the biggest idiot in the world? Like, he just,
I
like,
was trying to hold back
on
a lot of judgment.
Dude, I used so much chapstick.
He was told, I mean, he's like, you had a half a bottle of like, you are 18 years old, you total idiot. The doctor was super judgmental.
So you didn't read the
label? No, I just was like, oh yeah, this is like drinking a bunch of Cokes at once. Like, that's what it's going to feel like. And the doctor 18? Was like, you're a moron.
Yeah. Well, call me
I was
doctor.
An adult.
Sorry.
See, that's why I knew you were going to, you're my friend and you're judging me.
Oh, it's
me.
Not over once this podcast
I
is over.
I know it isn't. Edit all that out.
On April's somewhat out of kilter, harsh self-judgment, I just think that you're, if I could use a phrase, a no-dose enthusiast.
I mean, it was just ignorance. It was pure ignorance.
Yeah.
And just seeing people take them to study for tests. I'm like, this. I'm buying this at a gas station. It can't be that dangerous.
Sure, right, sure. Right. Yeah.
All the best Christmas gifts come from gas
stations.
We have to wrap up. I want to let you guys go back to your lives, but I do have one question. When you said we went out and did a bunch of weird shit, what did that entail?
We would just drive around. There was this abandoned bridge by my parents' house. We would go, you could like, it was blocked off from traffic and you couldn't drive on it, but you could like watch the freeway. It was just like driving around. And what I was going to say is we went, there was this house in Marietta Square that everybody, Marietta Square is like a big time Civil War-y place.
Mm-hmm. And full of ghosts.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And there was this house, this really nice old timey house that nobody had lived in for ages. And everybody's like, it's haunted. And we're like, whatever. But you could walk in it, even though it was still, it still had some furniture in it and it had a piano in it.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the thing is Jeremy told me once, he was like, I went there once and I was in there by myself and the piano was upstairs. And he was like, I heard the piano start playing. And he was like, I've never run faster in my entire life. And again, this is my friend. Like, I don't think my friend is lying to me. He has no reason to lie to me. So we would go drive there and stuff too. But I never had the balls to actually walk inside of it. There was one time he got me to like walk on the front porch. And then I was like, cool, I'm out. This is enough. Right. Tag. I'm going back to the car. And I sat in the car while he walked around it. But so just stuff like that. Just driving around and exploring. You know, when you're a kid, it's like you want to drive to places.
Yeah, I know.
And
that's what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
We had that house and that. Supposedly the woman who lived in that house was Minnie Minush. But I'll tell you the story of Minnie Minush another time.
Oh, cliffhanger.
What did Michelle say like 2 weeks ago? They asked her about what Obama's like. And he goes, well, you know, we put the teenagers, they go to bed or whatever. And then he goes into his office and reads code books till 2 a.m. and memorizes them. And there was a picture of him sitting alone with a single light on him, the shirt sleeves up and the tie on. And you know he does because he's like a dedicated – Clinton did. Bill, I mean.
Yeah.
All the great presidents, Roosevelt, all night long, baby. The job is all night long. You get 4 hours sleep.
Yeah.
And then you get up in the morning and you have a big – other than Reagan, who they handed the sheet with the 10 bullet points on.
Right.
Honduras.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for being my wife.
Yeah. But even Herbert Walker. Remember W went to bed at 10, got up early and rode his bike.
Right.
But Cheney and all of them were doing it.
Right.
But a president's supposed to burn the midnight oil. That's what you're doing. Lincoln, I don't think, slept for 5 years.
Yeah.
Which is why he looked like a dead dog at the end of his 5 years.
Yeah.
5 years he spent with a very small cabinet going, I've got to win this fucking thing. And I'm losing it, losing it, losing it, losing it, losing it.
Winning a civil war without a cell phone.
Yeah.
I don't know how he... I can't send 3 kids to day camp without a cell phone.
Right?
How did he manage the Civil War?
Well, for the first 3 years, he didn't. He sent a series of incompetent boobs up there who let the South get all the way to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, who almost attacked Washington at one point.
Yeah.
They were right over the river from Washington, and Yeah. No, the first 3 years didn't go so well. And
first 3 years of World War II didn't go so well.
No, an agrarian society with no factories to speak of. And we were just saved because the British wouldn't join them. They petitioned England 1,000 times, like the revolution. Please come over and help us. We wouldn't have won the revolution without France and Spain and Holland. I mean,
we begged them
for money. They gave us money. They sent over officers.
Yeah.
We'll send you some people. You guys are rabble.
Yeah.
You don't know how to march. You don't know how to drill. You don't know how to shoulder arms.
Yeah, your top guy has wooden teeth.
That's what I always love about hating on France. It's like, do you really think we would have been a country if France hadn't given us a bunch of money?
Yeah. Have you seen that big statue
out
the coast of Manhattan?
They hated the English.
Yeah.
I also like we're going to make the military great again. Aren't we spending more money than we've ever spent in the history of the world?
Those are just those great, beautiful lies.
Yeah.
We're going to make the military great. They're coming to take your gun. No, no, no. And it's just, you just sit and you watch and you scratch your head. It boggles my mind. It boggles my mind.
It is boggling. But on the bright side, we've had an exciting, calm black president for 8 years. We're likely to have a very intelligent woman. And there's gay marriage, and we have a treaty with Iran, and we're in Cuba. Things move forward. You know?
No, things move forward despite – and that's the last laugh that I think Obama has – or not Obama, the nature of history is like all of this shit goes on, and it's – the frosting on the cake that attracts your attention. Underneath it, all of these things have occurred. You know, there will be some form of gun control when a lunatic shoots up a private school in Virginia and a bunch of senators and congressmen lose family.
Yeah.
And then something will happen. When somebody comes back and doesn't take Gary LaPierre's call on the way back from their kid's funeral.
Right. You know?
That's when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to have to – somebody's going to have to literally get blood on their suit.
Well, they've already given up on gay marriage.
And I'm not saying I want that to happen.
No, of course not. They gave up on gay marriage, and now they're forced to fight trans bathrooms. That's what they're reduced to.
Yeah, they just keep backing
up. Right. Yeah. Gay marriage happened, so they can no longer really even talk about it anymore because they can't get it undone. It can't be undone. I mean, it could be, but it would be Leviathan, and no one's going to go for it.
Right.
And the next thing's the voting. You've seen all the states overturn their crappy voting laws. And then Trump brought it up the other day. Oh, we have to have voter ID laws.
It's and he's going to have his people police the
poll. How
about
that?
That's going to
be great. How Brownshirty did that sound?
Yeah. How many of those people feel comfortable going into the neighborhoods where that's going to be a problem?
Do you remember the crap?
That sounded very Brownshirty.
Dead Zone, was it, with Stephen King?
Yeah.
Where Martin Sheen is Greg Stilson, the right-wing politician, and
holds up the baby when
That's all I can think. I was saying it to my wife the other day. I said, do you remember this movie? And in the book, the only thing that undoes him is there's at a rally and someone pulls a gun on him and he holds a baby up in front of him. And it's on the cover of Time magazine, him holding the baby up in front of him to take the bullet for him.
Yeah.
Cause he's got brown shirts at his rallies. Yeah. He hires biker gangs for security.
Right.
And if you've seen the people at the Trump rallies yelling N-bomb and bitch and every other thing they yell and, it's wild. It's a wild scene.
It's Evel Knievel if he ran for office.
Without the charisma and sex appeal.
Or the swagger stick.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's going to lose. It's too soon. Only the Democrats could blow this.
And they've blown it before.
But I think he'll, barring an unforeseen event, how will he concede? Or will he concede? Or will he contest the election in the face of a landslide loss? And or walk out on stage and wordlessly rape an eagle.
On the podcast, reach for the sky, Dana Goldbaum.
We barely try.
The Dana Gould Hour. Never an hour.
This has been the Dana Gould Hour, brought to you by The Internet. Music by Andy Paley, with Jake Posner behind the board. Produced by Jeff Fox. Graphic design and web production by Spencer Hunt and Segan Friend. Sound editing and post-production by Jalinda Palmer and Joe Napolitano.
Hey, if you like the show, why don't you drop us a line at show@danagould.com. Tom Kenny speaking.
Excuse me, my weenie sneezed.